Yeah, Frank here has got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's what do you call it, Kramer?
Billiard room.
No, not billiard, not the billiards. It was
billiards room.
Come on already. Come on, we call it the
The place to be.
The place to be, yes, the place to be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can.
Time to play the game!
Well, you always left me satisfied and smiling, so...
That's what she said!
Why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Place to be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be Podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
Isn't that what I just said? What is wrong with you?
Is it the Pelicans? I didn't know it was the Pelicans.
Oh,
I
you're like,
nothing
you're like,
about the word Pelicans.
Yes.
I worked during the fucking day, okay? Well, then what's the point of...
Scott Russo. What would be the point of that?
What's the point of giving the Rockers theme? I don't know! you know what? I'm from now on just going to read. And if you want to comment, be my guest.
Just read things that are up to date. How about that?
Just shut up. I'm done. I'm not talking about it.
I don't know what the fuck the Department of Health is.
To do worse than Josh Richard.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be Podcast, and coming to you live from deep inside the PTV Man Cave, I am your co-host, Justin Rosero, and joining me, as always, my PIC, the one and only, Scott Criscola. Scott, how you doing?
Good evening, JR. It is always a pleasure to be with you. Good evening, PTV Nation, to episode 188 of the Place to Be Podcast. Wow, the countdown is getting smaller and smaller, JR, until the big 2. More on that in the future. We got a whole bunch to talk about even before we get to that.
Yeah.
A lot to talk about. We got a full show tonight. We got a lot of stuff to talk about. It is Tuesday, rare. Actually, we're a little shifty this week. Instead of our usual Monday, Wednesday, we have Tuesday, Thursday.
Yes.
So, but tonight, we go into the big steel box. In the box. And landmark show.
Yeah, this is one, you know.
Attitude Era lore.
Yeah, we're talking about getting to 98 for a while. Some big time shows. We already did WrestleMania 14. We did the big Over the Edge main event. And now we definitely reach one of the best shows here. At least definitely one of the most memorable shows. One of the biggest shows that continues the growth of the Attitude Era.
Yes. All right. Let's get in here. I'm sure he's going to...
Hey, what is going on here?
What do you think? Fat fuck. Get out of the way. All right.
Why is he so mean? He's so mean to him?
Why does he say the same thing? He knows what time of the week it is. He knows what we're supposed to do, and he always acts like I'm breaking into the fucking classroom. We're so excited.
So
all right.
Scared.
I'm so scared. All right. Tonight, inside the Place to Be podcast, V Squared brings you, again, one of the more memorable shows in the history of wrestling, because two things make this show: bloodbaths and carnage.
The premonition. Mission.
This, Kane, is your destiny. A first blood match.
The prophecy.
No force on earth can stop destiny. Not even Stone Cold Steve Austin.
I bled before. I ain't afraid to bleed again. Your big dead ass belongs to Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Revelation.
If he does not become the World Wrestling Federation champion,
I will set myself on fire. The Black Angel. I am the Lord of Darkness.
Body
in their souls.
Getting intense up in here.
Ugh. Those never get old. Never get old. And even when at the time when a lot of people thought the production quality was still shaky, they definitely were turning the corner on their production quality. And then, of course, they'd be the standard bearer for sports entertainment in terms of, you know, graphics and editing and music and just putting everything together into a beautiful package. Tonight, inside the Vintage Vault on the Place to Be podcast, one of the seminal pay-per-views in the history of the Attitude Era, the 1998 King of the Ring.
I don't do any tricks.
Well, you know what? You were in the preliminary rounds, and that's not on the show, so nobody cares what you think anyway.
Yeah, his preliminary match back in 91.
Yes, that was his last match. But he doesn't know when his next... He never knows when his next match is.
True.
I think he was supposed to win the 2003 King of the Ring.
Was he?
Yes. And then, of course, it never happened, so... all right. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Let's jump in.
Do it.
June 28th, 1998. Live from the Igloo, otherwise known as the Pittsburgh Civic Arena in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Steel Town.
Yeah.
Our first visit there since SummerSlam 95. So
no.
We are...
King. Yes. Yep. You're right.
SummerSlam 95 was the last time we were in Steel Town. So we don't have to give you the history. Same building.
Right.
They don't hop into the Mellon Arena for a few more years. Your attendance, solid, as always. 17,087. Buy rate, 0.85. Solid. Now you're starting to see the buy rates go up. Now you're starting to see the crowds buying the pay-per-view start to, and that'll just get higher and higher. Your announcers, as usual, the voices of the era, good old JR, Jim Ross, and Jerry the King Lawler. Okay, let's jump right in.
Mm.
Our opener, little six-man tag action, your World Wrestling Federation light heavyweight champion, Taka Michinoku. Hooking up with a team that tag team that's kind of been floating around aimlessly. Not really knowing what the hell to do with them. That is Mosh and Thrasher, the Headbangers, the former World Wrestling Federation Tag Team Champions, taking on this rogue Japanese contingent known as Kai and Tai.
The Oriental Six-Man Tag Team Champions.
That is right. You
said
it,
this
Larry
the
Nelson.
AWA.
Yes, you said it, Larry Nelson. We talked a lot about this storyline, JR, on the last show, the last vault.
Yes.
About this storyline and the whole, you know, this cruiserweight contingent. So it continues, obviously. And he was getting the right idea still, putting the Japanese cruiserweights in the openers, kind of like what Nitro was doing with the Mexican wrestlers.
Yeah, and this was a much better fit than at Over the Edge. We had Bradshaw involved, and it was fun seeing him toss guys around a little bit. But the Headbangers, not your typical cruiserweights, but they could move around the ring pretty well. They had a good style, and we haven't seen them on a pay-per-view in a while. So, I mean, were they in the Rumble? It's probably the last time. Oh, no, No Way Out. They fought Mero and Goldust, so.
Yeah.
Unless you're in the, they're probably in the Mania Battle Royal, too, huh? So, okay, hasn't been that long, but been a while since they've been featured in a match.
Yeah, yes, exactly.
So they teamed with Taka here to open the show. This was actually unannounced. This is a bonus match they opened the show with. I think just if you look at some of the match lengths as we move along, not a lot of long matches on this night, so maybe they figured they could fill some time and get these guys on the card. And I thought it was good again to showcase Taka. He gets a clean win over Funaki here. And again, another solid match to open the show. Nothing spectacular. So not really, the idea is there, Scott, to open the show with these guys, but they're not really putting out the match that we're seeing from WCW with their cruiserweights opening the show.
No. There's, again, you're dealing with a time where Vince is still kind of enjoying the character-driven, the shock value of stuff and not really getting into the work rate portion of it. Again, much better than the handicap match at Over the Edge, like you said. Maybe it was the freshness that Mosh and Thrasher, again, hadn't been on pay-per-view for a couple months. The crowd was amped. I mean, Pittsburgh crowd, obviously, East Coast, so still, hot WWF crowd. Taka's still really cranking along, but were you getting a little discouraged about the fact the title was suddenly now, 5 months earlier, the title was such a big deal. Now it seems like it's just, they seem like they've lost their interest in wanting to defend it. Did you get that feeling at this point?
Yeah, because he's kind of in this feud with this group, and their intention that they've, haven't really stated much of one, but it's clearly not to win the light heavyweight title. So the title's kind of an afterthought now already in this feud. It probably would have been best off. I know they wanted Taka to be strong, but might have been best off just taking it off him and letting him have the side feud and getting it on someone else. Because, yeah, he's been on Raw a lot, but he's not really in any feuds around the title. So already it's kind of feeling like with when British Bulldog won the European title the year before, almost just, it feels like a vanity belt already.
Right. Which sucks, because the whole point of them bringing in the light heavyweight title was to kind of snazz up the lower mid card, get some hot matches down, like WCW was doing with the cruiserweight title, with, you know, IUK and Dean and Ray and those guys. The storyline wasn't great. It was good. We talked about it the last show. Enough to grab the audience, at least in the opener. And you know, an extra match doesn't hurt. I mean, who knows how much the tickets were back then, but, you know, an extra match doesn't hurt. And obviously, Taka, I guess, already started getting stale as a babyface. I mean, we'll talk about
it. I don't think it's his fault. That is not using him.
Yeah.
In ways to put him in situations where build heat. He hasn't really been in a feud. I mean, this is a feud, but he hasn't been in a title feud where, you know, he's been assaulted and he goes and defends the title and the guy wants the belt. And there's really no reason to care for him. Even when he came in, you know, he had that match with Great Sasuke, and he didn't do much after that. He wins the title in the tournament, and we still don't really know much about him besides, you know, Jim Ross and Bradshaw have been trying to teach him how to become Americanized. I mean, other than that, there really hasn't been much else given a reason to care about Taka. So, yeah, of course he feels stale already because he hasn't been in any heated feuds over the belt that he has, and we weren't given a reason to care for him in the first part. Now, you can say, well, WCW Cruiserweights were the same way, yes, but they also had, like, you know, 11 or 12 of those guys, and they were all out there mixed-matched and, you know, putting on crazy spot fests, whereas Taka wasn't getting that opportunity.
Precisely, and it was all about the belt. They were all about...
No, you know, not necessarily. They'd have random matches on Nitro and stuff. They didn't give a shit about the belt. They were just crazier matches. You had the 3-on-3 matches a lot. You know, the trios where they didn't have to tag and they were flying in and out of the ring. And, you know, those are the matches you're looking for if you're not going to have any kind of, you know, meaningful characters or feuds in the division. You want those kind of crazed matches.
Right. And the other thing that helped the Cruisers was Tanay, who knew all about the backstories of these guys.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Really, exactly. Yes.
Pushing, you know?
Yeah. That's a good point as well. He was really getting over their characters from Mexico.
You think Lawler had any freaking clue who Dick Togo was or Men's Teo? He probably had no idea who any of these guys
were. No, he was too busy making friggin', you know.
You know, tit joke.
Yeah, no, I was going to say racist jokes, but...
Oh, that too. Yeah, but the boob jokes came later, but... Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I know what you're talking about. Yeah. Egg Foo Young, Chicken Chow.
Yeah, shit like that. He's too busy doing that shit.
Yeah. Headbangers and Taka get the win. Taka hits that awesome... And tell me the Michinoku driver wasn't an awesome finisher.
Oh, definitely was. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
And it would have been better on bigger... Not better, but it looked even more imposing when bigger guys did it. And we'll talk about a guy... I bet you Savage would have even done a good job putting over these Japanese guys.
Of course.
Look at that men's Tio. Yeah, getting in there. Would have done a better job than Jerry did. Chicken Chow main jokes. So there you go. So the Headbangers and your light heavyweight champion get the win over Kai and Tai. But they don't go away. Not by any stretch do they go away. They're here for a little bit while longer. But good little six-man. Get the show started. Nothing crazy, but nice opener.
Yeah, fine. I just feel like they could be using these guys a little better.
Yeah. By the way, only one match in. I was close. Follow along with us on our awesome message board, bigelow34.proboards.com. And as I always have to do at the beginning of the show, JR, where were you on this fine June evening?
In the bedroom with Mr.
Locked,
Flanagan.
Locked up with the with the small box and the little 12-inch.
Mr. Flanagan, the two of us were there, locked in the bedroom.
Guys, I didn't want to see any little Japanese guys. okay. So before we get to the next match, out comes Mr. McMahon. And Vince, of course, comes out to confirm that your World Wrestling Federation champion, Stone Cold Steve Austin, will lose his title tonight against Kane. And as you heard in the opener, it is a first blood match. We'll get to that later. Sable, let me talk about Sable, because at our last pay-per-view, she apparently was fired. But,
Ass. Damn, hell, and bitch.
That's what probably Lawler was saying in between the Chicken Chow main jokes. What happened to Sable? Tell us, JR.
The night after Over the Edge, we get this tearful video. Sable's retired. We get a farewell, kind of a tell-me-a-lie style video. So we think Sable will be gone for a while. Well, 2 weeks later, she's back as Vince McMahon's personal assistant. It was kind of insinuated, basically, that she had to bang the boss to get her job back. They never really said it because we weren't to that point yet with Mr. McMahon's character. But That's kind of the idea here, that Vince brought her back as a favor. And it really doesn't go anywhere. They kind of made it like she was going to be stuck working for Vince, but that kind of fades quickly. So at this point, she's with him, and that's the reason given why she's been reinstated after losing to Mero at Over the Edge.
So she's with, she's with Vince here, and she was reinstated if she'd ride Vince's genetic jackhammer.
I don't think that was really said at this point.
No, not yet, but I think we worded it that way. Introduced him. This was simply, again, time killer, hype the main event, a little filler. Okay, next up, we have our first semifinal match of the King of the Ring tournament. Again, JR.
Fuck, goddamn, Jesus Christ, faggot, or any other racial or sexual slurs. Now then, as it pertains to video, we promise there will be less dick references.
Oh, shit. Watch your fucking mouth.
You and Flanagan were saying all these words, realizing there was not a full tournament on that night, JR, because you were a mark King of the Ring tournaments. So, again, they had other more important things to worry about, so they wanted to throw the whole tournament. They did do a whole tournament. We're not saying they didn't, but...
Right, they did on TV. And you know what? This is the first time I was actually kind of okay with it. In 96, you had a decent rest of the card, but there were matches you could have cut out. You could have had a tournament. You could have the guys in the tournament. 97 was a train wreck clusterfuck. We've gone over that.
Yes.
They easily could have done a full tournament.
Yeah.
Here, you have a lot going on. I get it.
Right.
I get it. Right. I still think you could have because you have so many of the shows, but I'll give him a pass.
Okay. Two of your favorites. Well, two family favorites of the Rosero family.
Yes.
One of yours and one of your cousins. Ken Shamrock
made
it to the semifinals, taking on...
Red Carrot.
That's right. J-E-F-F. C-A-R-R-R-O-T.
Jeff Jarrett?
Jeff Jarrett, yes. Tell us, JR, how they got to the semifinals.
All righty. Ken Shamrock defeated Kamba bin Mustafa in the qualifying round, while Jeff Jarrett defeated the ever-increasingly useless Farouk. Much to the chagrin, Kevin Kelly was crying backstage during that match.
Yes.
First round, Ken Shamrock defeated Mark Henry, so he's gone through two Nation members already, whereas Jeff Jarrett defeated Mark Morrow. So. And in
so
those qualifiers...
Of those four matches, you notice three Nation guys out.
Yes, and quickly, Mark Henry defeated Terry Funk, and Mero had defeated Blackman, so that's how they got there. Actually, only two Nation members. Farouk's no longer a Nation member.
Oh, that is true. Yeah,
so just Kama and Mark Henry eliminated by Shamrock.
Okay. Obviously, you're wondering how long this match is, and this begins the Vince Russified era of... Yeah, we got time to kill. Why don't you throw two guys off for a couple minutes? Which pretty much what this was. Match is only 4 minutes and 47 seconds.
Yeah.
Again, the last three matches really dominate the show, and we'll get to those later. At the time, but I agree with you, though. At this point, we had a lot of stuff to cover. So, the King of the Ring. Hey, you booked it, not me. And don't get me near your jackhammer. You know, in this instance, the King of the Ring was not the focal point of the pay-per-view. Obviously. It was, but it wasn't.
It was like third from the top billing, but it was still a focal point. Like, they still put a lot of importance on the tournament, and partly is because Ken Shamrock's involved, and, you know, he's a big tournament guy, and the next part we'll get to in a minute, but I disagree with that statement. I do think there was some focus on the tournament itself. Now, the focus was no longer on being a king with the robe and the crown and the gimmick, but the focus is winning this prestigious tournament to become... You know, King of the Ring without the King gimmick. That's kind of where the focus, almost like more of a realistic sports tournament, UFC Ultimate Fighting style tournament. That's kind of where they were headed. They really played up Shamrock, you know, being the King of Kings kind of thing with all the tournament wins and the master of the tournaments. And they really, really played that up heading into this show.
They did. Yeah, you're right. I will retract that statement. You're right. My point was they just didn't obviously fill the show with it. I didn't say it was unimportant, but they obviously had other things they needed to fill slots with.
Right.
Well, here's an interesting thing. The first match was only 7 minutes. Yeah, I guess they couldn't have added matches earlier in the show. There wasn't enough time. So, all right, never mind. The match is not bad. Obviously, Shamrock, the hotter guy at the time. Were you surprised, or were you expecting Shamrock?
No, this was... Jarrett was just aimless at this point. He had that kind of useless feud with Blackman. He's back in the country gimmick. Tennessee Lee's with him. Really hadn't been put over as much of a threat anymore. So this was not a surprise on any level to me. I expected Shamrock to be in the finals. Well, I mean, they were hyping him so much at this time with all the tournament stuff. all the, you know, battle tested. He's won a lot of Ultimate Fighting tournaments, a lot of amateur tournaments. You know, that was really the focus heading into this. So they were really, really pushing him as a guy that was probably the favorite to win this tournament.
Yeah. So he dispatches of Jeff Jarrett in less than 5 minutes, much to the chagrin of your cousin. And he moves on to the finals. Who he faces, we shall see, because that is the next match. And the next match is in this tournament to avoid, I don't want to say avoid his defending his title, but is not defending his title on this evening. And that is your World Wrestling Federation Intercontinental Champion, The Rock. And The Rock taking on a newcomer, JR, maybe a newcomer to the World Wrestling Federation, but certainly not a newcomer to fighting in the ring. Tell us about his opponent.
Mr. One and only Dan Severn had made several appearances on Raw as a color analyst before finally stepping in the ring. He's also actually the NWA heavyweight champion at this point. So he began appearing with Jim Cornette. Severn started helping out his fellow Ultimate Fighter, Ken Shamrock. But on one Raw, he snapped, attacked him, and beat him down. And it looked to me at this time, like I said, this is why I thought there's a lot of focus on the tournament, that we're setting up for a Shamrock-Severn final. They really pushed that matchup. They really kept talking about how awesome it would be to see that match now here after they had fought a couple times in the Ultimate Fighting world. To me, that was the heavy hype heading into the show, and that's what I fully expected to be the main event of the tournament.
I disagreed at the time. I understood your thinking on that, but I fully expected that they just wanted yet another Rock Shamrock match to continue the feud.
Well, that made a lot of sense storyline wise. I'm just saying the hype heading into this show really focused on these two guys and their tournament past. And it seemed like that's maybe where they were headed. And also right. The fact that they had them in the semifinals kind of was just like, well, if you're not going to do it now, when are you going to do it? You know, we're in a tournament. You've been pushing these guys as specialists in tournaments. They have a history together. Like, it just seemed like it would make sense to put them in the finals together and establish Severn. Just quickly, Severn started a long history of Greco-Roman freestyle wrestling, Arizona State University, and then he became a coach, got into mixed martial arts in 1994, you know, quickly became one of the greats there. Also did some pro wrestling on the side as well. Like I said, he was the NWA world champion, worked in UWF in Japan, UWFI rather. So there you go. He defeated Chris Candido in 1995 on a Smoky Mountain card to win the NWA title. Actually held it for 4 years.
Wow. It's pretty impressive. It's one of the longer reigns since the Flair days in the mid-80s.
Yeah, so he'll have a rather short run here, but he'll be on some more pay-per-views for us to talk about him. But okay. That's pretty much the background on him.
Yep, and how did these gentlemen make it to this point in the tournament?
Mr. Dan Severn defeated D'Lo Brown in the qualifying round, and Rock defeated Vader, quickly free-falling. In the second round, Dan Severn defeated Owen Hart, who had defeated Two Cold Scorpio. And The Rock defeated your boy, Triple H, who had defeated your other boy, X-Pac. Interesting match.
Yeah, it was a very interesting match.
Of note, when Dan Severn fought D'Lo Brown, he hooked him in an armbar submission hold where he's like wrenching back on his arm, and he ended up actually legitimately tearing D'Lo's pectoral muscle.
Wow.
And actually knocked him out of action for a little bit, and he came back here, and he's wearing a chest protector. And as we'll see, that'll play a major role in his future.
Yes, it was actually a blessing in disguise.
God bless him.
God blessing in disguise for D'Lo Brown. Another quickie match, barely four and a half, not even 4.5 minutes, as they are hustling along the tournament here. So you weren't really surprised then that Rock won the match. He would win, by the way.
No, I wasn't surprised. I was actually a little disappointed, though. I mean, look, it made sense. Rock was the future. He needed the win. I just felt like Severn could have really gotten a big bump if he makes the finals of the tournament, goes toe-to-toe with Shamrock, and they have a really great kind of map-based match. I thought it could have really made him. And Rock, I didn't feel like needed to be in that finals. I mean, it made sense, but he didn't really... Do we really need to see Shamrock beat him again? I mean, we've already seen it a bunch of times where he's tapped to him. So I thought they could have really made Severn here and really put over that feud, and maybe they go into a rematch at the next pay-per-view or something. But it just seems like they kind of killed Severn's momentum right out of the gate by having him lose here. And he doesn't lose clean. D'Lo interferes and hits a frog splash on him to get his revenge and help The Rock move on. So I get what they were shooting for. They wanted the traditional face heel, but even Severn's basically heel here. So, I'd say more disappointed. I wasn't really surprised.
A quick match to hustle this thing along. I don't know what they needed to hustle along, but
yeah, they were flying on this. I mean, yeah, the last two matches they had a lot of logistical stuff to do, you know, with the cell coming up and down and everything else.
Yeah.
So I get it. They had a lot of big things to come, but I guess they could have slowed down a little bit with some of these matches.
Yeah, I mean, 4 minutes? I mean, really? Yeah. These are like superstar lengths. It was crazy. So The Rock wins, and what about how he won this match? Date back to Severn's opponent earlier in the tournament.
Date back to you not listening to me once again. D'Lo Brown interfered with a frog splash and hit it on Severn, getting some revenge.
I know. So The Rock wins. And moves on to
See,
face Ken Shamrock.
This is bullshit now, because you're going to pretend it's always a joke, even when you're not sure that it was. Like, even when you legit didn't hear me.
You're not going to know now, though.
Yeah, I know I'm not going to know.
That's even better.
Dick.
Har. All right, so The Rock moves on. He will take on Ken Shamrock and the King of the Ring.
What the hell was it? What was that laugh? It was like an old cartoon fucking Hanna-Barbera dog or something. What the fuck was that? It was like a panting laugh. It was like Snidely. Was that the fucking dog that laughed like that?
Snidely Whipwreck or Snidely Whiplash, whatever.
Mikey Whipwreck.
Mikey Whipwreck. Okay. All right, so there's your final. So Ken Shamrock will take on The Rock later on in the night for the King of the Ring championship. Next up, we have a interesting tag match. We have the team of Too Much. I'm trying to think. Are they?
I'm sorry, Dennis.
yeah, they were in the Mania 14 Battle
they
Royal.
Okay, so we know who we told you. We talked about who they were. It is, of course,
you're upset that you to win Battle Royal.
Ken Shamrock and
Mr.
Fat. I'm talking about Ken Shamrock now. Brian Christopher and Scott Taylor.
Wait, does anyone actually watch NCIS? I'm seeing like Facebook statuses about like some major thing. I can't believe people actually watch this show.
Is that the one with Mark Harmon?
I don't know.
I'm asking you. That's true.
I think it's been on CBS for like 14 years, but I don't know who actually watches it.
Well, the one there's two of them. There's NCIS.
So that's two of them for me not to care about.
And then the other one's NCIS Los Angeles. That's the one with LL Cool J in it.
Oh, okay.
Don't ask me how I know that. You know how I know that? Because it was on after Raw the other night? Yeah, it was on after Raw last.
You have a very close bond with LL Cool J. We know that.
Yes, I know. That's why I know. Yeah.
Okay, there's apparently a character named Donald Ducky Mallard on that show.
Oh, God.
Leroy Jethro Gibbs. Tony DiNozzo. Ziva David.
Wasn't Donald Ducky Mallard a tag partner with Van Burton?
Somewhere
another indie
so
promotion?
They're actually, their 10th season started in September.
Oh, my God.
21 million viewers. Who's watching this show? I don't guess.
It's on CBS.
Christ.
Best network on television. All right. So Too Much, the team of Brian
Christopher soon.
And Scott Taylor, taking on a guy making his pay-per-view debut in the WWF.
Let's quickly rehash on Too Much, because I don't know how much we had talked about Mania. So it's Brian Christopher and Scott Taylor. Scott Taylor was obviously basically a jobber, and then they used him a little bit in the light heavyweight tournament and that division when that was kicking off in the fall. He's out of Maine, indie guy that they were pretty fond of. I think Kevin actually talked about him a little bit. And then Brian Christopher, kind of aimless after a suit of Taka, not much going on. So he said, you know what? Kind of in the mold of the New Age Outlaws, let's just put these two guys together, see if they have any chemistry. And they did. So here they're still known as Too Much, and they're basically, I don't want to say kind of, I don't want to say like it's a homosexual gimmick, but it's kind of edging that way where they're very overly physical with
touchy
each other. So, yes.
Touchy-feely?
Yes. Yeah. A lot of hugging and a lot of giggling and stuff like that. And they're basically supposed to be two obnoxious jackasses that maybe are oblivious to the way they're acting, but that was kind of where they were headed with the gimmick.
Taking on a guy who's not making his pay-per-view debut,
no.
I apologize, making his pay-per-view debut in this new gimmick.
Yeah.
You remember him as various characters such as Leif Cassidy and what was the other one?
Shinobi.
Avatar.
Yep.
Shinobi. But now he's just plain old-fashioned Al Snow.
Leif Cassidy is actually around pretty recently, right? He was into 97 for a bit there, so.
All
right, Al Snow had been popping up week after week on TV over the spring trying to get an interview with Vince McMahon about getting a job. He'd pop up as a Japanese photographer, a Spanish commentator, and various other incarnations, but would always end up getting dragged off by security. On one particular Raw, Jerry Lawler managed to piss off The Undertaker and actually ended up getting tombstoned. So the next week, he said he was going to have a special enforcer to stand by and protect him at the commentary table. During the first hour of the show, when Lawler was backstage, since he'd only commentate the second half, we were seen with Lawler and a man under a blanket. And Lawler kept talking to him and saying, "You're going to be my bodyguard when we get out there." So they get out to ringside. Lawler takes the blanket off, and it's Al Snow. Lawler said he promised Snow a meeting with Vince McMahon in addition for his protection during the evening. Finally, Lawler screwed him, of course. He lied. He never got Snow the meeting. So Snow kept sneaking up from the crowd and begging Jerry for a meeting. Finally, Lawler said he's able to get Snow a match at King of the Ring. If Snow won, he would get his job back. But if he lost, he was gone. So Snow teamed up with Head, which we'll get to in a minute, to face off with Too Much. And of course, we told you the stipulation. So Head is a gimmick that he came up with while in ECW, where he was spending time after the Leaf Cassidy gimmick ended. Basically, the gimmick was that he was going slowly crazy, delusional, and he was talking to a mannequin head. And he'd carry it around and have conversations with it. And this gimmick actually took off, caught on with the ECW crowd, and became kind of a phenomenon. They'd hand out, you know, fake mannequin heads, and everyone would shake them, and they'd have like a, it'd almost be like a club atmosphere. They'd kill the lights, and it looked like a rave. And he got really over. He actually set to had a pay-per-view match in May for the title with Shane Douglas over the ECW title. So he got a pretty good push in ECW. You know, well used, got really over, and that's why Vince decided to bring him back here. So there you go.
Yeah. Was it Taz he had a great match with? It's a great match that he had with somebody in like 95.
Chris Benoit he had one with.
He had a good match with Benoit. I think that was it. I think he had one or two title shots. I think he fought Shane Douglas once or twice or something as well. So he had a pop
I'm
here and there.
You. I am really going to kill you.
Ray had a great pop in ECW. So.
You can't even fit. That time you were you didn't hear me.
What? Who? So Al Snow, didn't he fight Shane Douglas? And then he had the
I wish Shep Ramsey
music?
Would come fucking take you up to space.
I Marge. Wish I had. I wish Charlie Wilcox's wife would walk in right now. Okay. So.
I'm sorry. It was WrestlePalooza. Shane Douglas and Al Snow.
Okay. All right. So this match just makes is just a colossal.
Yeah, it's a fucking train wreck.
It's a fucking mess.
Waller ends up being the ref, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was the referee, and you know, he was obviously helping his son's team win, although they were still doing
his son
the
and his
on air.
Future son-in-law is the way they were basically portraying it.
Yes, pretty much.
They yeah, I mean, it's basically a handicap match with Snow. It goes almost 9 minutes, which is long as shit on this card.
Yeah. Meanwhile, they give the other two matches
yeah,
like
nine combined.
Yeah.
So Jim Ross on commentary here clearly is disgusted. He shits all over this thing from beginning to end. And at the end, he says that we set the business back 10 years or whatever with this match. And the way it ends is Lawler pulls out a bottle of Head and Shoulders shampoo. They tie or they screw Head into it. And then Christopher pins the bottle of Head and Shoulders. And basically, so the shoulders would be down. It's just stupid nonsense. So Snow does not get his job, and he'd actually go back to ECW for a while. He will eventually return, but for now, he's gone. Odd decision in my eyes. Another kind of swervy thing going on here, because I thought for sure Snow would win and get his contract and be here. So to see him lose and then literally vanish from TV again for 2 months was just odd. It was like, okay, what was the point of that? They brought him in, and now he's gone again. So kind of weird stuff, but... as we'll see, he will eventually come back. This match was nothing, though. Pretty stupid overall.
It was pretty stupid. And for 8.5 minutes, it was just it sucked. So so there you go. Too Much wins. And
there you go.
And there you go. And towards the path towards, you know, probably, you know, registering at Macy's and picking China Patterns.
They were heading that way. We'll get there eventually.
Pretty much. Okay. Next up, pretty solid singles match here. And in fact, JR, we go back in time a little bit for this match. Because if we turn back the clock to one of our favorite guilty pleasure pay-per-views with one of our favorite commentators of all time.
Even though we're coming for you, nigga.
No, not him. No, not him. Another guy that frequents this program quite often. And that is yep, that guy right there. 4 years ago, in the semifinals of the 1994 King of the Ring in Baltimore, the Rocket, Owen Hart, defeated the 1-2-3 Kid on the way to winning the King of the Ring. 4 years later, they meet again. However, this time, of course, the 1-2-3 kid is now X-Pac.
X-Pac.
Firmly entrenched in DX. Wow. X-Pac. And Owen Hart, the Black Heart, the King of Hearts, is pretty much back to floating aimlessly.
Yes. Although, no, now he's a little bit more focused. He was floating aimlessly. Now he's with the Nation. And I thought this was the role that best fit him, the smarmy, whiny douche heel. He was kind of lost in that face role. He had his heat early. Once the whole thing with Sean and you know, the early stages of the Triple H feud kind of fizzled out, he was really, really lost. And you could tell he just wasn't comfortable in the role. This is what suits him best. Tremendous is the whiny heel. He gets to control these matches, has some great offense. And this is just where he worked best. I thought it was smart of them to get him back in a stable as a heel.
Yes. He obviously was getting buried as a babyface with, you know, in the Triple H feud and such. So it was good to have him back in this role as a heel and putting on great matches. And here, this is one of the best matches of the night. And they actually, it was good they gave this match some time, 8.5 minutes. And just a solid match. But again, Owen looks at the lights. I just enjoyed the match. I really did. It was good to see X-Pac back.
Yeah, I mean, really, he had been out for so long. And that match with Triple H that we mentioned was his first one. As he had been rehabbing that injury that got him fired from WCW. So, added a lot for DX to be at full strength now in the ring. So good to see him here, like you said. Do you think they could have made this a tournament match and maybe gone to the eight matches or eight guys?
Yeah, I don't see why not.
Maybe dump the opener and make that one?
Yeah, I don't see why not. You know, I mean, the opener was fine. They had advanced that whole Kai and Tai storyline, but
you could have had them in the tournament. You could have done Taka in one of the guys or something.
Yeah, sure, you could have.
We could have had Taka face someone else and they cost him.
Yeah, you could have had Taka face or face one of the guys and have them cost it. Yeah, sure. I don't see why not.
Yeah.
But they made a big
this seemed like weird that they just made this. I know. The point was to continue the Nation DX feud, and that's gonna roll on to our next pay per view when we'll really get into the heated portion of it. But this was good. I agree with you. I like this match. You know, China interferes, costs Owen the match, and again he jobs, but it's fine because DX, I think X-Pac kinda needed that win. This is his first major match back. So I'm okay with it there, and this feud continues and it'll become one of the hallmark feuds of 1998.
Yes, it indeed will. And incidentally, to kind of get the mood going for the show tonight, playing in the Event Center right now, based on what we saw on Raw last night, we'll talk about that over the coming weeks, is that very Rock Triple H match from Raw the week before this show.
Okay.
Where Rock advanced to the semifinals. So it's on the screen right now. Yeah, I mean, overall, though, great match. X-Pac was putting on good matches in WCW. Did you think? I mean, do you think he was given a good amount of time in WCW to really put his matches forward? Do you think he was kind of stunted by the whole NWO run-ins? Do you think he really was I meant to ask you this at Russell after we did the 14 review or after the Unforgiven review. Do you really think that he was booked well in WCW overall?
Well, yes, in a way, because, well, he did his gimmick well, which was to be a whiny bitch. You know, don't forget, he was coming off that crybaby. Sex to wishberries. The crybaby thing with 1-2-3 Kid, and he was still kind of being that whiny. He was just like a whiny, bratty member of the NWO, like the little kid brother of Hall and Nash. So that's what he was used as. Was he misused that way? Probably. But he did have some very good matches, and then things just kind of fell apart towards the end when he got hurt. But he had that really good feud where he was involved with Flair and Piper and really antagonizing them. And, I thought he had a good run there. I do. I think it was good that he went. I thought it helped kind of refresh him and allow him to kind of grow up out of the 1-2-3 gimmick and come back in this role as more of a serious guy. So I do think it was worth him going. So, yeah, I think he was used fine.
Okay. And I think that would continue on here start with this match. Obviously, he already, as you mentioned, he already wrestled Triple H in a qualifier, but this is his real return match here on pay-per-view.
Right. I didn't think they were actually going to have that match on Raw. I figured it was like a red herring that X-Pac, because they had kind of teased him a couple times, and I'm like, they're not going to go through with this match. It's probably just they're going to say X-Pac's hurt or something like that, and But no, they went through with it, and he won by count out, I believe. So, or Hunter won by count out.
Yeah. So X-Pac gets his first win on WWF pay-per-view since.
Jeez.
95 when he was the survivor at the 95 Survivor Series?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. 95. So his first pay-per-view win since the 95 Survivor Series. Wow. Yeah, long time.
God, when was the last singles win?
Oh, God. Did he ever have one?
I don't know if he did.
I don't know either. I don't know!
Because he mostly wrestled
yes,
with Kane Ring 94. He defeated Jeff Jarrett.
Oh, that's right. To get to the match with Owen.
Yes.
Right. Okay. So there you go. All right. So this is his first singles win
for four years.
Jeez.
It's crazy.
Wow.
Crazy. Because he had a lot of tag matches.
Yeah, he did. You know, he was working with Owen. With Razor through most of 94 and then turn heel and then, you know, and then left. So there you go. First pay-per-view win for Mr. Waltman in 4 years. So there you go. Next, we have our first title match of the evening. The World Wrestling Federation Tag Team Championships are on the line. The Great Road Dogg and the Badass. The New Age Outlaws taking on JR's favorite team. No. A team that you did like, though, and that was the new Midnight Express. No, not the one with Randy Rose in it. We talked a lot about Randy Rose this weekend, too, didn't we?
Yes, we did.
And that is, of course, Bombastic Bob and – what was that, right? Bombastic Bob and Bodacious Bart. Is that what it was? Yeah, Bombastic Bob and Bodacious Bart. Yeah. I didn't realize they were going to get a tag shot. Kind of weird. But I guess they needed a team to
– Well, don't forget, they're the NWA Tag Team Champions. those titles are not on the line here. They were gelling as a team. I know they're kind of a joke and an afterthought, but I thought they were doing all right. I thought they worked well together. I thought they gained a rapport together, and it seems we have had a lot in this time frame with the Outlaws themselves, too much, and now the Midnight Express. And you know, I think if they weren't saddled with the new gimmick being the new Midnight Express, if they were just allowed to team up and be something different, I think we'd look back at them maybe a little more fondly at their run. I think putting them in that was a no-win situation.
Yeah, probably not. Not a no-win situation. But I mean, it made for a good team, and you know, they worked okay together. Yeah, probably the first documented time in WWF pay-per-view history that the WWF and NWA tag team titles were in the ring at the same time. They met in the same pay-per-view. I wouldn't say they were, as you said, they weren't. The NWA titles were not defended. Obviously, if this was 1986, it would be really friggin' cool, but
yes,
you take what you can get. Ironic that a couple of years after being the mid-90s most successful team in the Smoking Guns, Bart and Billy go head-to-head here.
Yes.
So, the match is okay. I mean, not as impressive as I remember it being. I remember when I first watched it, I liked it. And then when I watched it again to write this review, you know, what, 5 years ago or whatever it was, 4 years ago, I wasn't totally as blown away with it. It was okay. You know, the Outlaws were still kind of working the kinks out of their DX swagger, kind of implementing what work in the ring they do have and the new DX way of doing things.
And acting more as a face team, playing that role.
Yeah.
You know, they have been heels for so long since becoming a team, and now to become the guys that are worked over to the match and make the comeback, which they're better suited for, I think. Better suited for Road Dogg to lay around and get his ass kicked and make the hot tag to Billy and let him fly around for a few minutes.
Right.
You know, this is just a match to get them on the pay-per-view. You know, they go almost 10 minutes. I'm glad to see the Midnights get kind of, this is like the little swan song. It was good. I thought it was good to them to use their depth a little bit. And I can't say I liked the match that much, but I liked the idea of it.
I did too. And the whole, this is another example of this match of kind of the way that the Attitude Era needed to be explained from time to time, as Lawler was talking about, you know, DX has become such fan favorites, even though they were such heels just simply, you know, 2 months before.
Right.
Shades of Grey, everyone. Shades of Grey. It's pretty much the catchphrase of the next 4 years. Obviously, the longevity of the new Midnight Express would not last too much longer after this. But
do you agree that if they had a different gimmick, they could have maybe been a more legit tag team?
Yeah, I think so. They had good chemistry. They had two good guys, two big dudes. both with decent work rate, nothing fancy, but you know they weren't meant to be that way. They're, you know, I would say they're not as, I mean, not to compare, it's that kind of apples and oranges, but at least since we are talking about the Midnight Express name, I mean, they're not exactly Stan Lane and Bobby Eaton by any stretch.
No, no.
But that's not what we're trying to compare.
You know what, though? They might have gotten hosed out of the title picture anyway, because obviously 98 becomes a year where the tag titles are almost main event level for a while.
Yes, because the tag titles would kind of be used as plot points for...
Right, and the Outlaws... The Outlaws are probably as close... Well, I guess we had Bulldog and Owen. As close as a legit team to the main event as we've had in a while. Like, you know, they're basically portrayed as top-level guys with the tag titles, whereas in the past, the tag titles have always been kind of lower down the card.
Yeah.
So outside of Bulldog and Owen, I don't know if the last time we had a team where the titles were on them and they were kind of considered this level, main event level.
Demolition?
Yeah.
Maybe?
I don't know.
I can't say the Hart Foundation. Not the heel run, anyway.
No, I don't think the face run either.
No. I wouldn't say Demolition.
I don't know if even them.
Because remember, at that point...
I don't know if there's ever really been in the modern run.
Well, don't forget, in 90, they were... Oh, no, that was with the Road Warriors. Never mind. Yeah, I don't know. It's... Well, you're using WWF as an example. What about Arn and Tully?
Oh, yeah, of course. But I'm just talking here.
Oh, first time doing it. All right, well, if you're just using here, then this has got to be the first time.
I'd say Bulldog and Owen were, if you count them as a legit tag team, which I do.
I do, too.
Like, I don't count Steve Austin and Shawn Michaels as a tag team.
No, no.
You know,
you're also taking into account what's helping them is that they're actually in a major faction. They're not just
right, yeah, and that's the first time we really have that in WWF as well. I mean, we've had the Stables, where, you know, the Brainbusters have the titles as part of the Heenan family, and the Hart Foundation is part of the Hart family. But this is really the first time we've had, like, a stable of guys where... You know, they're not united by the manager. They're united as a group, kind of control the titles like this.
Yes. By the way, there's a great brawl going on between DX and the Nation right now, and your boy Kama Bin Mustafa has this awesome-looking bowling shirt on. This is very
I mean, they feuded a lot during this time. They had a lot of stuff going on. We had the invasion that we talked about when they went to CNN Towers, and they showed up at Nitro at the Scope, and a lot of stuff going on with these two groups, and they'd fight week in and week out, and... just a modernized version of the Gang Wars that felt very played out and blah. It's kind of been reheated now with a revamped Nation. You've got better workers involved with Owen having joined and Farouk out. And, with X-Pac and Triple H in there as well. So,
by the way, of course, looking at our good friend Graham Cawthon's thehistoryofwwe.com, we'll keep track of if any of the matches on this show are on any DVD comps. There are a few. We haven't gotten to them yet, but there are a few. This match isn't one of them. You're talking about... but anyway, getting back to what we were saying. I mean, what about the... Let's even make it even more specific. The last time a tag team standalone was main event level. Because again, Bulldog and Owen and the Outlaws are part of a faction who was already being pushed as almost main eventers. When was the last time a tag team in WWF? I can't really think of one. Definitely not the Road Warriors. Yeah, I don't know. I don't think there was ever a tag team.
Yeah, Demolition and Road Warriors are probably the closest to being looked at. I mean, well, I don't know. Did you say Money, Inc.? They had that run with Hogan and Beefcake.
Yeah, that's true, 93. I mean, that was almost like mid-show main event.
Yeah.
At 9, so.
Yeah, may I go with them?
Yeah, might be right. Mm. Yeah, I like that. I like that one. That might be it. And maybe Demolition. Maybe.
Because Money, Inc. was put on the level of Hogan, you know, with DiBiase and stuff. So that's probably my pick as far as the one closest. We may be missing one. I mean, the Quebecers are main eventers in my heart, but...
Yes.
All right, well, yeah, Shawn and Diesel didn't really have it long enough to be considered a legit team. How about Yoko and Owen? I'd say so. They were in those that they had the matches with Diesel and the Six Mans and everything else. So,
Yeah, that's entirely possible.
I'd say them.
And then they're in main event with Diesel and Shawn. So
yeah, okay. So maybe there's been a couple more than we thought.
But again, in a group, so that also was that also helped too. But that's fine. So the New Age Outlaws retain their World Wrestling Federation Tag Team Championships as they defeat Bombastic Bob and Bodacious Bart.
Bodacious.
Bodacious. All right, now we get it.
PTB Nation, it is now time for the Rob Houston Memorial Hacksaw Jim Duggan update.
Vince Kenny McMahon Jr. here with your Hacksaw Jim Duggan, WCW Rob Houston, that stupid prick memorial update. Hey, Scott, you friggin' old slut, go shut your mouth while I go through these matches. Peoria, Illinois Civic Center, June 4th, 98, Jim Duggan defeated Mike Anus. Mike Anus, who's that, Mr. Ass? Who are you, Mr. Hole, Criscolo? Ha ha, you and Anus. Jim Duggan defeated the Barbarian June 5th in Muncie, Indiana. Who the fuck lives in Muncie? Fort Wayne, Indiana. What are they running my old 1996 loop? Fort Wayne, Indiana. Jim Duggan defeated the Barbarian. Then they redid that match with the Barbarian winning in Grand Rapids, June 7th, 1998. June 21st, Jim Duggan defeated Reese's Pieces in Richmond, Virginia. And he defeated Barbarian again on Thunder. I don't know what that is. Orlando, Florida. And that's it for June. That's it for Duggan. Hey, Criscolo, what do you got coming up this weekend? Too fucking late. You're fired, prick. Suck it.
It's like a hit and run by the boss this week.
I don't think Andy would be very pleased that his name was actually Mike Anus. Very upsetting.
I don't know what I'm talking about.
Okay. All right. Time to move on to the really the tri-main event of this show. Triple main event, if you will.
If you will.
If you will. First off, the
finals. So what we're going to do here, we're going to have three matches on top, baby. We're going to screw each of the faces at the end, though. We're going to have them come out, think you're going to win, and then we're going to screw them over. That's how we're going to get things done. King of the Ring tournament, baby. Ken Shamrock taking on The Rock in the 1998 King of the Ring.
I'm not sure if Dusty was booking... That's probably what would happen.
I book everyone's life, Scott. I'm going to book your weekend right now. You're going to wake up in the morning. You're going to go get some lunch. Then you're going to come home. You're going to eat dinner. Then you're going to go to bed. Then you're going to wake up. You're going to eat lunch and go to bed. That's your whole life, baby.
He says I'm going to get up in the morning and go get lunch. What morning do I have?
That's you sleep in because you're a lazy bastard, baby.
Okay. Brief refresher course. Coming into this final, JR, who have been our King of the Ring winners to this point?
King of the Ring winners, baby. 1993, Bret Hart.
Oh, jeez.
1994 is Owen Hart. 1995, the one and only King Mabel. 1996, Steve Austin. And 1997, Triple H fittingly defeated Crush, since he's your crush.
So there we go. And now we will have
it's
yet another champion.
A little crush.
Oh, God. All right. So Ken Shamrock takes on The Rock in, this has got to be what, Dude. The, you done singing, what is that, Six Pits None the Richer?
Oh, I wish. Like... Kiss me.
God. Is that on Dawson's Creek? Probably.
No.
I didn't realize something on a
you
side.
You kind of hung on the creek, buddy. You don't even understand.
No, listen. I didn't realize, I thought you were the only one, but over the Christmas time, I realized my sister owns every season of Dawson's Creek, so you were not the only one.
Oh, good company.
Thought you were the only one. So there you go. Okay, so this has got to be the... School, huh?
Yeah, I figured I'd throw it back a little bit. This is not actually wrestling tonight.
I thought we were doing. I thought this was the our what monthly dedication to the Rotella Sway.
We can do that too.
I thought that's what we were doing right now.
The Crooked Sway.
Yes, yeah. It's kind of like swing up since he kind of goes
scoliosis swing.
Yes. All right. So the reason he's playing that is, of course, the betrothed, the great Triple H, actually doing commentary here.
Oh!
And of course, one of the best memorable pay per view moments is when he puts on the headset, starts going testes, 1, 2, 3, to obviously do the continuing DX toilet and reproductive organ jokes.
Do you enjoy when he says that to you?
Well, I have three of them. I'm very impressed.
Well, the other two don't work. He's like, Scott, testes. Whoa, look at that prostate. Swollen.
Did you just say swollen?
Yeah. Is that what happened to old men?
This is the sixth consecutive
paper. Prostates. Let me ask you, how many years away from you are you from sitting in the tub out by the cliff in the Cialis commercial? I'm guessing you're close.
I don't know. Hopefully not. Hopefully for
you and LaRue in the tubs on the cliff together.
Oh, stop. LaRue and the two midgets, or the one midget pointing in two different directions?
What?
Whatever that picture is. I don't want to talk about LaRue and Cialis. Can we move on to the? Can we continue
Time
on, please?
Time to play the game.
In a bathtub on a cliff. Lots of candles. Okay. For the sixth consecutive pay-per-view, if I can finally get this out, for the sixth consecutive pay-per-view, these two gentlemen are meeting on pay-per-view.
Six consecutive?
Yeah, going back to the Rumble.
No, they didn't fight the last two.
They weren't at in tag matches.
God, you are awful. You're just mailing it in now. This is it. You hit the big time and you just forget it.
Vince threw me off. I don't like Vince doing the Duggan updates. He scares me. Throws me off. Go back to. I like Jake's daughter. She was much nicer. Vince throws me off. All right. So after a 2-month hiatus, yes. The Rock and Ken Shamrock collide in the King of the Ring final. So maybe. I can understand now why you had that thinking about Severn. Maybe you thought that the Shamrock Rock feud was had run its course.
Yeah, I can see why they may want to reignite it, because they never really had a proper blow off. But to me, the Shamrock thing, Shamrock Severn thing, just made sense. It just the whole tournament build and everything else, and the hype. And I mean, this was a good match. I liked it a lot. And Shamrock kind of finally gets that clean win over Rock in a singles match that he hasn't really had yet. He doesn't win the title or anything. So he's the logical winner because, the whole tournament tested. And I knew from the beginning he'd probably be the King of the Ring. I just thought he'd have a little different path. I'm kind of curious maybe why they didn't do him and Severn in the first round if they wanted to not have in the finals. It just seemed like a match they would have had, that's all. It's odd that they kept them apart. I mean, unless they had future plans for them.
Yeah, I thought so too. And obviously Shamrock winning the tournament is not a bad thing.
It's a good thing.
It's a good thing. But the good thing also is that Rock now transitions from one feud to the next because of who's on commentary. We'll talk more about that at the next vault. After taking a couple months off, they meet again here and continue to have good chemistry together.
Oh, definitely, yes. Yeah. So a very good match. And Triple H at ringside actually gets involved. Rock ends up kind of pie-facing him, and they get to a little brawl. And Shamrock ends up winning clean, like I said, with the ankle lock. This is a match I held both guys, I thought, similar to the Rumble, where Rock made it to the end and lost to Austin. I thought this is another match where Rock loses but kind of looks strong in doing it. It's the third or fourth time he's tapped to the ankle lock. Let's see, Survivor Series he tapped clean, right? Mm-hmm. I think he did it at the Rumble before the screwy finish.
Yes, he did. Obviously 14.
No Way Out. In the War of Attrition.
Yep. And 14.
Yeah, so a bunch of times, and then on Raw a couple times, I think, as well. So,
yeah, so softening up the ankle over the last 8 months. But here we go. Ken Shamrock, your 1998 King of the Ring.
Ready to knuckle up.
Yep, knuckle up. And Rock, your Intercontinental Champion, transfers from one guy to the next, and this feud begins a feud that would come to define the Attitude Era, one of the feuds that would define the Attitude Era.
Yeah, I did confirm as well. He did make him tap to the ankle lock at No Way Out. So,
okay. So there you go. So tapping like crazy.
Yeah, and Shamrock has unfinished business with Owen Hart. Remember, Owen turned on him to join the Nation. So they've kind of forgotten that here, but that'll pick up with Steam following the show. So yes. Shamrock could have some interesting battles over the next few weeks with this little king gimmick he's got going on. And I thought he was a very fitting winner for this tournament. I thought it fit the year. We get rid of the corny crown and the scepter and all that stuff. So why not have a legit kind of tournament MMA Ultimate Fighter guy you know, kind of legitimize the tournament by running through everyone and taking home the crown. So I thought this was a really smart choice to win the tournament. So three straight good winners, I think, you know, ever since the Mabel debacle. And really, yes. we're 4 out of 5 here, or 5 out of 6 for, you know, quality King of the Ring. I'm not going to comment on the push or the follow-up. I'm just saying, when that night ended...
The decision.
Right. When that night ended, out of the, you know, 6 winners we've had 5 times, we've said, okay, that's a good choice to win this tournament.
Yes. After that, that's different. Again, different story altogether.
Yeah.
But the decision of who they pick...
Right.
We're always good except for 1 year.
Yeah.
So, all right. So Shamrock wins the King of the Ring. Rock.
We have to look on the Nichols Carlson meter where the bitching would have been following the show if it was good or bad. I'd say it was like maybe a 0.5 on that meter.
Yeah.
Following this match.
Yes. But obviously it would change. He would change obviously as we got towards the end of the year, and then not that he'd be pushed because of being king, but at least his character and he as alone would stay fairly strong. So. Okay, we are up now to not necessarily the rejuvenation of a feud, because they really haven't been feuding, but after what was seemed like almost a year of warring with each other, we have a return of two guys who kind of helped stabilize the gap between one era and another.
Yeah, it was kind of the pre-attitude stuff with them. Yep. And a few that really rejuvenated The Undertaker, really got him going again, and it solidified Mankind as a major player. And after a run as Dude Love, he's back, so we'll get into that here. So the night after Over the Edge, Mr. McMahon really just dressed down and ran into Mick Foley for blowing 2 chances at the title. After all the help he gave him, he still couldn't get it done, so he fires him on the spot. Foley walks off dejected. Vince says he's now looking for a new challenger to take the title from Austin, so he makes a match between Kane and The Undertaker to determine the new number one contender that night on Raw. Austin McMahon actually joined Lawler and JR at commentary, which I thought was awesome. I thought the 4 of them were really funny together. As the match wore on, Taker was about to win, but Mankind runs out, helps Kane win the match. Vince was shocked, but claimed he liked the attitude and the new look that Mankind brought, and he eventually makes Mankind versus Undertaker because Taker wanted revenge on him for costing him the match with Kane. Behind the scenes, there was actually talk of doing a third Dude Love Steve Austin match at the show to be a Hell in the Cell match. Vince and crew decided that the feud didn't really have the legs to draw a third time, so decided to switch things up. Foley was very upset to be taken out of the world title match and what he thought was a cell, but then he found out he'd still be in the cell, and he was pretty excited and rejuvenated. So he sat down with Terry Funk, and they watched the original Hell in the Cell match to get the idea, and it was Funk's idea for Foley to start on top of the cage, and that all comes from Vic's book, the first book, so...
Yes. Very good book, by the way, as well.
I'm not booked.
Not booked. For those that want to look for the spot, it's exactly 1 minute and 9 seconds in.
Hmm.
So it's very early in the match. Actually, technically, the match hadn't even started. Now, you and I have talked about this a few times, and I mentioned it in my comments on our review, bigelow34.proboards.com, and I think you do as well, but you've mentioned it in the passing. We've had other discussions on our show. The first time, did he say he just jobbed? No shit. When you first saw it, what were you thinking? You had to have been like, I'm sure you made your parents come up the stairs and go, "What the hell's going on?" Because I'm sure you guys screamed to the top of your lungs.
All right, well, let's set the stage. So, like you said, 1:09 in is the big moment. Foley starts on top of the cage, and you don't really know what's going on. Undertaker starts climbing the cage, and that's when you start to kind of perk up and like, all right, what's going on? So they start wrestling on top of the cage. They're brawling around on top of the cage, and you're thinking, all right, they're going to fight a little bit, and they'll climb back down. And I don't know if anyone expected what was to come next, and hopefully Michael Buffer will allow us to enjoy it for a moment here.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh, look at this. It broke through. That's a lot of weight. There's 200-300 pounders up there. They're destroying the Hell in the Cell. And my God, don't get them over here where we are. What's going to happen here?
Actually, I got to wait there anyway because I think it's the second one. So the original one, they go, they're brawling on top of the cell. And they walk over towards the edge where they're fighting. And, you know, it looks like they may fall off. And, of course, the closest we've come to this was when Shawn Michaels was hanging off the side of the cell. And,
right.
And Taker knocked him off, and he fell to the table, which is still a crazy bump, but he was hanging. He wasn't on top of the cell.
Right.
So Sean, of course, took that bump, which is very impressive. Here, they basically get like a walking start. Taker grabs Mankind by the back of the neck, by the pants, and chucks him off the side of the cage. And before you even realize what's happening, Mankind crashes through the announce table, the Spanish table, and it's just chaos at ringside. Everyone's going crazy. Jim Ross is freaking out. The Spanish commentators are tipped over. The crowd's going nuts. Undertaker's just staring down off the top of the cage, and you're thinking, you fucking killed him. And yeah. I remember sitting there thinking, was this even supposed to happen? Did they fuck up? How could he do this? How is he alive? I mean, how is he living? How did they get this precision down? I remember Andy and I were just like incredulous that this even occurred. And, you know, it's funny because I want to read this point from our buddy Brian Samak. He sent me a message. And it's funny because I had the same feeling. So here's a message from Brian. When Taker tossed Foley off the cell, we all know how amazing it was. What isn't seen on video but really pisses me off is that the show in Pittsburgh, which he attended, was that 5 minutes after he fell and was being attended to, the fans started booing and yelling about how short the match was and giving a that's it kind of feeling. Until, of course, Foley runs back in and everyone pops again. As they're raising the cage for Foley to get wheeled out, I'll never forget the fans. Not sure how many there were doing it, but it was audible from where I was, about three rows from the front camera side, and about 12 feet from where Foley landed. Curious if anyone else was there and experienced this, and he thinks he was really classless assholes to act that way after Foley gave his body like that. And I'm going to admit to Brian, I wasn't there, but watching it home, I was kind of upset because I thought the same thing. I thought if they were going to do this crazy bump, why not save it for the end? Because I thought the match was over. Because they had Terry Funk comes out, Vince McMahon comes out, and they're wheeling, you know, Foley to the back. And, you know, I thought the fans actually had some pretty good comments. One said, "Now you have your ratings, McMahon," and you know, kind of one welcomes Terry Funk to ringside, and it was madness. I just remember being shocked. Did you have the same kind of experience?
Oh, absolutely. I was actually watching it with Dr. G. And I thought he was dead. I thought he and I, you could tell it was planned. I shouldn't say that.
I don't think at first you could. I think there's so many. I think there's so much of a rush going through that you didn't know what the hell was going on. You know,
because the way it was. I mean, it wasn't like, because if Foley stumbled and fell, he would have fell straight down onto the. And if he had fallen straight down onto the you know, the floor.
Yes. Oh yeah.
He was done. But it's kind of sad when it's like, yeah, I used the Spanish table as cushion. That's pretty much what it was. But such a precision flip. I mean, he did a somersault midair. This is a big dude. I mean, you know,
oh, and the timing, you know, 85. Yeah, the timing and you know how precise it was just mind-blowingly amazing to me that he was able to land right on that table. Like, I literally don't know, A, how he did it, and B, how he didn't die.
Yeah, I can't either. I mean, it was crazy. And kudos to JR and King, who were, you know, pumping it up and not pumping it up. Were really can't think of it, putting it over.
Yes.
That's the word I'm thinking of. And he's saying, like, "Well, somebody get a goddamn doctor out here." I mean, JR was like beside himself.
Yeah, well, it was crazy. You never see anything like this. I mean, it was insane. It really was. I mean, instant classic memorable moment. That'll live on in infamy. I mean, it worked. You know, you can't say it was wasted. I mean, they made a count. And it was perfect. The camera shot was perfect. The bump was perfect. The moment was perfect. It was crazy. And seeing Undertaker just standing there staring down at him as the cage actually raises, he's on top of it. And they wheel Foley out of ringside into the back. And like I said, I remember thinking to myself, like, why did they do this now? Why didn't they wait? You know, now we're screwed out of this match. Yeah, it was an awesome moment, but I'd rather have, you know, more. And then Mankind steps up off the stretcher, and you're just in shock. I'm like, how is this guy even walking? And then he climbs the friggin' cell. I don't know how, and he said in his book that he doesn't know how he did it. He basically had, like, dislocated shoulder and everything else, and he's pulling his, you know, near 300-pound frame up this cage with these tiny little holes. It's not like it was the big blue bars or anything.
Right.
So he pulls himself up. They're fighting on top of the cell. Now, there's a chair up there as well. Taker lifts Mankind up, chokeslams him, and the cage busts open, and Foley crashes to the mat. The chair hits him in the face, and now you really think he's dead again. They're like, didn't you learn your fucking lesson the first time? You're doing this shit again.
Yeah.
And now we've reviewed Beyond the Mat. We did it with Jordan Duncan a while back. Yep. In that movie, they play it off like this was a mistake. At least that's how Mick Foley's wife plays it off. Like, the cage wasn't supposed to break. Mm-hmm. I don't know if Mick said that so he didn't get in trouble with his wife or if he really doesn't remember. But that had to be planned, right?
I thought in the book it wasn't because... No. The bump was planned. I don't think the chair hitting him in the face was. Remember, that's where he got the whole...
Oh, of course not, yeah.
Putting my tongue through my lip or... You know, he wasn't... Remember, he's turning
his
head...
His tooth was up
in
his nose. Yeah.
His tooth was up his nose and he had a hole in his lip and he was sticking his tongue through it and all this other crazy shit. I think the bump was legit. I think the chair hitting him in the face was not. I don't think the chair was supposed to follow him down.
So you think it was planned for him to go through the cage?
I have a feeling it was, yeah.
I do, too. I don't think they would take that risk.
Taker dropped him pretty good. I mean, did he really think that his body was going to hold? That thing was falling apart to begin with.
I mean, if you look, the way they stagger around and line up, it's clear that they're looking... To me, it's clear that they're looking for the precise spot to go through the cell.
Yeah, the correct section of the...
Right.
Of the pre-planned ceiling.
So I don't see... I think maybe Foley didn't let his wife in on it. So maybe she wouldn't be pissed or something. But I don't see where it was not planned. To me, that's just way too crazy of a spot not to have planned. And the way they played it off, they knew exactly what was going on, what they were doing. So they go back into the cell. Taker actually hangs down and drops down. And he ends up breaking his foot when he lands.
Yep.
So now they're tending to Foley again. Funk's in the ring. Taker chokeslams Funk. He starts beating up the refs. And now you're thinking the match is going to end again. You're upset again. And they still keep going. And from here, things kind of slow down a little bit because Foley can't even stand. At one point, Taker punches him and just crumbles in the corner. And that's when he smiles and the tooth is in his nose. And then Mick actually gets control of the match somehow. Ends up emptying a bag of thumbtacks in the ring. That's when things really start to get crazy. Taker picks him up, ends up... Mick has the mandible claw. He gets on Taker's back. Taker falls backwards onto the thumbtacks. So now Mick is rolling in the thumbtacks. Then Taker chokeslams him on him. And then tombstones him as well. So, and then gets to win. And this, to me, was just a star-making match. Mankind was already someone ascending within the promotion. This made him like a star in wrestling and maybe beyond. This is what really launched him. That he would put his body through this. We always knew he was a madman, a maniac that would torture himself. Yeah. Crazy.
It's indescribable why. I mean, you look at the clips from, you know, the match that he had with Funk in 95 at that King of the Death tournament or whatever they had in Tokyo, where he's, you know, blowing up fireworks on his face and falling on barbed wire with fire on it. And you're thinking, Jesus, how could you get much better than that? Well, yeah, you throw yourself off a 25-foot thing and then drop yourself, you know, 15 feet down with a freaking steel chair smashing your face. Mick Foley will go down as a guy who may not have been technically sound, and we heard a lot about it in Ric Flair's book, but the guy knew how to get a rise out of an audience. And
a rise? I mean, it was more than a rise.
I mean, in general, but this specific moment, I think, is his magnum opus.
Let me ask you this. Mm-hmm? Do you... You know, at the time, I was in the know. I knew stuff, but I didn't really have ill will or hard feelings towards anyone. Like, I didn't think about booking and holding down or anything like that. But I remember actually being kind of upset with Undertaker after this match for a little while because I felt like he didn't really give anything in this match. I felt like it was all take. And I felt like he almost killed Foley a few times, and I felt like he didn't really get anything in return. I remember kind of holding it against him personally, thinking, you know... Taker gets credit for being involved in that match, but it's really Foley that did everything. I mean, you know, the best thing Taker did was kind of guide him to the commentary table on the first bump. After that, and other than that, it was all Mick.
You know, it's funny. You're the first person I've ever heard say that. I never actually thought of that.
Hey, what is he really? Nothing happens to him. He doesn't go in the tacks. Doesn't fall off the cage.
Yeah, I've got to agree with you on that. I never even thought of that. That's you're the first person I've ever heard actually come up with that kind of theory. You know why? Because I think a lot of people just kind of accept Taker as a guy who doesn't take bumps. And
well, especially at that time. But I mean, right. This wasn't his bumps. I mean, this was, you know, obscene bumps.
Yeah,
this
is the guy putting
his life on the line. I just remember it really bothering me.
Interesting.
I thought it was kind of bullshit at the time.
I have to process that. I'm not disagreeing with you, but I'm just saying I've never actually heard it before.
It worked in a way, because to me, you remember Foley, not Taker in that match. I mean, I think Taker gets credit where maybe he doesn't deserve, but I think when you really, you know, think of who was made a star, that, you know, it's Foley from that match. So maybe it worked. Maybe that was his intent. He thought if he took all the bumps and the heat, that he'd be the one to, you know, really get the shine from it. So maybe that was the plan. I don't know. But, yeah, crazy.
Wow, I'm fascinated by that. That's actually, that's interesting. You kind of, yeah. Interesting. I never really thought of that. That the Taker kind of like was handed an easy thing to do and never really got, you know, never gave anything back to it. And he never took any crazy bumps in return. It's not like he fell through the cage. Should have tombstoned him. Well, then he would have probably crushed his knees, but interesting. But Taker was kind of in a weird stretch here. Let me ask you this. Do you think Taker was how do I word it? Do you think he was out of place with the Attitude Era at this moment before he really settled in? Did you feel he was kind of out of the, cuz remember he hadn't, you know, he wrestled at this show and other than Kane, I feel like he was out of, I know it's not like I'm rambling. I'm trying to.
No, I don't think he was. I think he fit.
Okay.
I don't think he was like a relic or anything. Bro, you know, there are some guys maybe, but I don't think he was one of them. I think all the Inferno stuff and, you know, his involvement with Dude and Austin and McMahon. No, I think they were working him in well.
Okay. Because maybe he was feeling out of sorts, and that's why he wanted to be involved in something with a little extra oomph in it. Maybe that's why.
No, I think they put this match together, and then I'm sure a lot of it was Foley's idea, and that's just the kind of guy he is. So I don't, looking back at it, I don't have an issue with what happened. I'm saying at the time, I felt like Taker got credit or didn't really put as much into the match. I mean, now it's fine. I see what's happened. Foley went on to superstardom and everything else. I think everyone's cool with what happened. I'm just saying at the time, that was my feeling. I felt like Taker kind of screwed him. I feel like he didn't give as much as Foley gave, if giving anything. So to me at the time, really, Foley was the guy that gave, and almost died. And when we talk about the match, we talk about both of them. So that was my beef for a while. I get over it. I don't really bother me or anything now. I'm just saying, coming off the match, that's how I felt.
Interesting. Okay. And even the time of the match kind of is deceiving. It says 17:14, but how much actual wrestling was there?
Right. No, I mean, and overall, well, the whole minutes. Package. Yeah, the whole package together is like, you know, probably a little over 20 with everything. Yeah. yeah, I mean, I thought Foley was done. I mean, I really did. And, you know, where do you think this hits on the pay-per-view moment scale? I mean, is this number one to you to this point? Not match, just moment. We've had this discussion before about stuff, but
yeah, it's pretty close. I mean, I can't see it being. Yeah, I'd have to say it is.
What else is close? Hogan slamming Andre.
Yeah, Warrior actually beating Hogan at six. They're just the pin itself.
Mm.
There's not much else that could reach that level. I mean, this is earth shattering.
Yeah, this was insane, and this was like, you know, immediate news coverage, everything, you know, just like crazy. You know, everyone talking about it, wanting to see it. You know, there's very few shows to me that you can say, order the replay, it's worth it. This was probably one of them at the time. You know, the show as a whole was good, but this was just a monumental moment. Just, I don't know.
There's no words to describe it. It's, I mean, he could have died.
Yeah, literally. Yeah,
he could have died. I don't know what the hell you do there. That could have been the end. Do you realize what kind of a risk that is? If he dies on that, Vince is done. He's done. You don't recover from that. I mean, we'll talk about another huge moment, you know, down the line. That was a little different, but we'll get to that. This is on camera, and it was a stunt, a legitimate bump. That thing fails. It's over.
I mean, yeah, really, you're gonna be pretty confident.
Look at the gravity of that. Look at the gravity of that.
Yeah, you're gonna be pretty confident that you're going to
land perfectly.
Yes.
And you're not exactly landing on two mattresses off your fucking garage. I mean, you're landing on a huge thing of wood and screws and metal. And I mean, it's not like he was landing on one of those stunt cushion things. I mean, you know, it's crazy.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
All right, we can sit here and talk about this all night. And yeah. Never get across the importance and the gravity of the moment. But let's move on. We still have another match.
The match itself, we both gave twos. I mean, it's the
no,
match.
No, but I've since changed my mind. I mean, this is a five. This is you know. I mean, you don't get much more memorable than this. The whole moment. I mean, I think we were looking at it too much from a match perspective at that time. So to me, this is I don't think you top it as far as a moment.
It might be one of those matches two, moment is five. We kind of probably, you know, kind of qualify that. We've done that with other.
We have, but to me, the moments are the match. You know what I mean?
Yep.
It's not like Hogan Andre where the match sucked, but the slam was the moment. To me, the moments made, that moment of Hogan slamming Andre wasn't the match. These were the match. I mean, these moments, these were the match.
Right. Okay. I'm curious to hear. The feedback from PTB Nation, we get to it about that. Interesting. Okay. Now let us get to our main event. I don't know how you top that.
I don't know. I mean, at the time, I'm like, I don't know. I can't watch anymore. I don't know what's going on.
What do you do? I mean, Jesus. Obviously, our main event is for the World Wrestling Federation Championship. Your champion, Stone Cold Steve Austin, taking on The Undertaker's brother.
Kane.
Thank you. I was waiting.
And what an ascension for Kane. I mean, you know, a guy that they thought was going to be gone after Mania in a short time feud, all of a sudden in a world title match. I mean, you know, you didn't think he'd ever really do much outside of a feud with Taker, honestly.
Yeah.
And now look at him. Now he's wrestling, you know, in a major pay-per-view main event for the world title.
That's got to be Kane!
Thank you very much. I mean, this is one of the first times in a while that, you know, Vince did a legit elevation of a guy very quickly. Got him to this point. Now, the result of it, to me is I never really wrap my head around. But
let's quickly just get to the build. So
yeah.
Kane won that number one contenders match against The Undertaker. Thanks to Mankind. So it's set up. They have the first blood match. And then we have this promo where Vince McMahon has Kane, for the first time, speak with the usage of a little voice box that he put up to his throat to help get the words out.
State the following. Kane, if you would speak publicly for the first time. What does the contract
crazy. First of all, I remember a lot of people comparing that to who was the character on South Park, the war guy that had the voice box thing?
Ned.
Yes, Ned. So Ned. I remember that comparison early on.
Jim Bob's friend, Ned.
Yes. That was from the first season, right?
Well, he was on a few
was
seasons,
he on more after yeah. that? The first yeah, one was the main one with the... I mean, those are the... I honestly... I always liked the show, but I haven't watched much outside of that.
I've been watching it. It's on Netflix. I've been watching it. The Rotellus and I have been watching. We're like on season six now. But
okay. Season one was the one I saw a lot of. I had the DVD set. And
I did too. I love season one. Yeah.
That was the one with the... that was the Patrick Duffy monster, wasn't it? With the Ned?
Where they shoot Scuzzlebutt.
Him? Yeah, Scuzzlebutt.
Scuzzlebutt. Yes. Hi, kids. I'm TV's Patrick Duffy. Yeah.
Anyway.
And Robo Streisand and Michael Smith from The Cure. Oh, Rochambeau, you for it. Yes, that was season one.
Okay. So anyway.
But Ned lasts throughout the next few seasons.
Okay. So Taker has, Kane puts a stipulation out. And, of course, Vince, as only Vince can, topped it by saying, if he doesn't win the world title, he'll set himself on fire and breathe his last breath.
I know.
It's not dramatic enough. He'll set himself on fire. He's literally going to die for you. So,
but I'll tell you something. Before you go any further, I'll tell you something. At first, if this was like 5 years earlier, you're like, oh, well, that means Kane's winning because that's pretty stupid. But let me tell you something. After what we just watched,
yes.
Who the fuck knows?
Yeah, I mean, with Vince Russo, you don't know. I mean, look, we saw him kind of light up on fire at the last show, so or at Unforgiven. So, I mean, really, who knows? I mean, there was a slight chance.
Yeah.
You know, what kind of ruined it? We talked about this at Unforgiven, how it was stupid, how he had... everything was covered basically, and
right.
Taker wasn't. Here he's completely covered, so there's really nowhere for him to bleed, and that was part of the storyline. They're talking about it. They're like, "How's this guy going to bleed if he's completely covered?" So that kind of gave it away a little bit.
Right.
The last Raw before this was really memorable when Austin was in the ring and blood dumped down from the sky. And remember, he had that white Steve Austin baseball jersey on.
It was an awesome. I remember Dr. G wanted that jersey so bad, and they always had it like in youth large and 5XL. It was had weird sizes on the website.
Well,
but
it was
he
pretty much
that.
The target demographic, but
that's true too.
That was such a stark contrast. The red blood on that white baseball jersey. I remember it was a great, great visual.
Yeah, it was. It was.
What did you think about them putting Kane in this match? Did you think it was a good idea?
Yeah, I had no problem putting Kane in the match.
He was definitely over enough as a heel.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. I'll just say it. I didn't have a problem with him being in the match. I had a problem with him winning the match. I didn't get it. We'll get to that in a minute. The one thing about first blood matches, and this won't be the last one, in Attitude Era lore. Almost a year later, we'd have a similar one.
Right.
Involving Austin, but we'll get to that. We'll get there. First blood matches are tough because, you know, you got to be careful. You never know.
Mm.
You know, bleeding is not controlled. Now, mind you, we're not dealing with two guys like Flair and Dusty who have sleep paper skin.
Well, Kane didn't really have anywhere to bleed anyway.
Yeah, and Austin was, you know, he could protect himself. Mm. You know,
I thought they worked. You know, they let loose. I didn't think they worked conservatively. And there's a lot of. You know, a lot of gimmick to this. Someone starts to lower the cell, and so the cell's kind of falling, and it's about to crush Austin at one point. And so, you know, there's a lot going on.
Right.
It's not just them fighting a match, which probably would have been a little slow and a little boring, but they have a lot going on. The most amazing part to me is when Mankind runs in. I don't know how this guy's even alive, let alone doing a run-in in this match.
Yeah, I know.
Undertaker comes out. Austin has a chair in his hand. Taker swings a chair, and it hits into Austin's chair by accident, and then that slices Austin open. Kane wins the world title because Austin's bleeding. Austin's not happy with The Undertaker. No longer has a title that he fought so hard for. I was fine with the title change here. I thought, yeah, it's ballsy. You just put the belt on Austin after that big build. But you know what? Looking at this time period and how the title was going to go and the feud in place, I thought it kind of worked to have him get screwed over by Vince and really put the heat on Vince. And as we'll see, it doesn't last long anyway. By the next night, things would change again. But I thought it was fine to give it to Kane here. I'm curious to see what your beef is with it.
Well, first off, let's also not forget that Austin was wrestling with a severely infected elbow.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
His
huge
right elbow
brace
was
yeah.
incredibly bandaged. I didn't understand why. I didn't get it. Was it to unless? They were creating a plot point for what was going to happen down the line. If that was the case, I don't see why you still had to have him lose.
I think it was a few prongs here. I think one was to legitimize Kane as a legit world title player. Two was to put heat on Taker Austin because that was going to be a major program. And three, I think just to do a shocking thing. I mean, that's what they were all about at this point, as we'll start to see.
Okay.
So again, I'm okay with it. I mean, it's not like Austin was going to break some kind of longevity record. You know, he was such an overstar. I don't think he needed, I mean, he's your best guy, so you want the belt on him. But they didn't have the intent of leaving it off him for long.
Well, that's for sure.
Yeah, so I mean, I don't know. I think I'm okay with it. It's not like
all
it,
right. Well, then
I don't look back at this reign and think it was ruined because of this.
Do you want to?
Hiccup.
Do you want? I know. Well, I know we like to look ahead, and we don't like to mention things in between shows till the next show. So I'll save. I'm going to write it down because knowing me, I'm 1,000 years old, I'll forget. I'm going to not call you out, but I'm going to refer back to your first point about making Kane a legit world title contender.
Okay,
and I'll explain why that point. Your other two points are perfectly fine.
Okay.
I agree with you about the whole. Yes, this is how Vince Russo was booking and get used to it for the next, well, for him, what, year and a half. But when Chris Kresge takes over, it's similar anyway, but a little more stable. And what was the, I forgot what your other, there was, oh, about Austin not needing the belt anyway.
Yeah.
That was your other point? Yeah. That I agree with too. And as we learn over the next few years, or at least involving Austin, the build to him chasing it was better than sometimes him actually having it. And we'll get more into that,
but I don't count that here because he's not really chasing.
No.
It doesn't
I agree. But this is a cute little example of it.
Okay. I think it's
we
good.
Get towards the end of the year, yeah. It really becomes a big
right.
deal, but yeah.
I think it's fine to save this for next show because, you know, we're running long, we got a lot more to do, and
yeah, no, I agree.
The next show's a little blah anyway. So I think we have some room.
But again,
to talk.
I'm gonna hold you to that.
Yeah,
first
do it. I want to talk about it.
Being legit because I don't totally buy that one. The other two I do. Your other two reasons I absolutely do. That one I think's a little shaky, but we'll get to it. All right. Overall, I just realized something as we were doing the show. I gotta see what I gave this grade. Oh, we both gave it a good grade. I gave it a B+, you gave it a B. I gotta say this Michael Dunn is one of my favorite shows. And I don't think it's just because of the Mick bump. This is actually legitimately a fun show to watch.
Yeah, we're looking now at what things are going to be like, and we're going to start looking at these differently. You know, you and I sit on these shows a lot of times and say, well, you know, there's only one great match, and their in-ring work, blah, blah, blah. We're to the point now where the storylines and the crowds and the heat and the gimmicks and everything else is so big and so hot that the in-ring action is going to suffer, and we have to adjust and calibrate accordingly, and I think that starts here. This card actually reminds me a lot of King of the Ring 96. Not a lot of great wrestling. Just a very solid show with a lot going on, a lot of memorable moments, a lot of big moments, a lot of storyline advancement. So to me, these are very similar cards.
Yes. Yeah, they are. They are similar cards.
You know, 96, you have the big Austin 316. That's the memorable moment that launched, you know, the run of Steve Austin. And here you have the launch of Mankind with this crazy bump. Obviously amped up from the Austin 316, but both equally as important in wrestling history. So to me, that's why these shows kind of mirror each other. Both have a phenomenal moment, solid wrestling, and good storyline advancement.
But you've opened up you did a good job tonight of actually opening myself and the listeners' eyes to a couple of things. Watch that Mick Taker match and see if you get the same feeling that Justin does about Taker, like, just getting a free pass here while Mick freaking almost dies. Interesting. That's still, I really like that. I've never heard that. You're literally the first person I've ever heard that. I'm blown away by that. And then the Kane Steve stuff, because we'll get more into that at the next vault. But yeah, this is a fun show. Even the undercard. We didn't really slam the undercard.
No.
But the undercard.
Well, that's one benefit of everything being kept short is that you can't, nothing really tanks the show match wise. Because nothing's really given that chance. So definitely, I'm sure this is one that's on everyone's radar that most people have seen. But if you haven't, throw it in, obviously. Let's get to the feedback, Scott, because we got quite a bit, and then we got some other business to take care of. So
yes.
I'll start with Wayne May. King of the Ring 98 may not be the best King of the Ring show in terms of wrestling, but when it comes to historical reasons and build up, I can't think of any other King of the Ring show that rivals this one. Tournament overall is very good. World's better than the one the year before. I also had this feeling that Austin was going to lose the title that night, and I was legit shocked at the change, which only made me anticipate Raw the next night. How can I forget the legendary Hell in a Cell match? Man, with Taker through Foley off the top of that cell and the chokeslam, myself and people watching it were stunned. We couldn't believe what we were seeing, and that made for one of the most memorable matches in history. Overall, a very good show and the best King of the Ring ever.
Okay. I'm having an issue loading the page, so if you...
All right, Steve Rogers. Kind of a spinning wheels kind of show. Oh, yes, there is a title change that would be reversed. And Mick Foley's first iconic moment. But overall, the pay-per-view is just there. And the fun doesn't really start again until the next month. Of course, Shamrock gets the win over The Rock when the IC title's not on the line. At least this is the end of that feud, and Shamrock goes on to something else. Back to the title change, it kind of starts the idea that Austin's better as the hunter than the huntee. After all of the times the wrestler's been booked to win the world title at WrestleMania, Austin's tied with three apiece. He's a great champion, but his character seems to be more suited stalking down the current champion than going through a months-long reign. Still having trouble?
Yeah, I had to close the internet and start over. So go ahead, keep going.
All right, Al Gore. The sixth King of the Ring pay-per-view is one of the better additions. And is highlighted, of course, by 17 minutes of Mick Foley destroying himself for the sake of entertainment. I don't feel the match is as fantastic as others do. In fact, I find it hard to watch, but it's certainly memorable, for better or worse. The rest of the card is okay, with a decent iteration of the tournament. The final match is highlighted by some very funny Triple H commentary, and a predictable but fairly enjoyable WWF title match. Might have been interesting to have the rematch in July instead of the next night. Unfortunately, with Russo doing the writing, meaningless reigns will become the norm. Like Hell in a Cell, the show as a whole is not a great one, but definitely memorable.
Okay. I'm here now. I got
right,
it now.
You can get the next couple.
All right, I'll do the next few. Okay. Ryan Schmuck.
Schmuck.
Overall, a decent pay-per-view. Undertaker Mankind was awesome from start to finish. Terry Funk gets chokeslammed literally out of his shoes. I bet Dennis Stamp loved that, and Funk should have got him a job when Funk returned late 97. The first blood match got me thinking, how in the hell can a masked person bleed? Kane was completely covered except for his one hand. We have a new champion, and things would change quickly. Gotta love the Attitude Era title changes. Jay Hinchy. King of the Ring lands in Pittsburgh, PA as the summer of 98 and the WWF is in full gear. Taka and the Headbangers take on Kai and Tai in the opening six-man tag in a decent match to get the Steel City fans warmed up. The Faces get the win, Taka get the 1-2-3. Ken Shamrock, Double J meet in the King of the Ring semifinals in a pretty good match with Shamrock advancing in the finals. The Rock Dan Severin match in the other semifinal. Rock stealing a win thanks to some help from The Nation and D'Lo. Al Snow and Head take on Too Much for Snow's contract with King as referee. Snow and Head lose, but we have not seen the last of them. X-Pac takes on Owen Hart as the DX Nation rivalry continues to heat up. I like this match as it was fast-paced, never a dull moment. X-Pac gets the win thanks to China's DDT on Owen. New Age Outlaws retain the tag titles against the New Midnight Express in a solid outing. Rock Shamrock meet in the King of the Ring finals, and it's a very good match again from these two. Triple H's commentary is hilarious, with the best line being, there's a lot of big things I am, but link. There's a lot of buy things I am, but lingual is not one of them. I forgot about that line. Shamrock takes the crown, making Rock tap out. Undertaker and Mankind meet inside Hell in a Cell. What more can you say other than it remains the most violent Hell in a Cell to date, as Taker does everything to Foley but kill him. Even Terry Funk gets a choke slam for his trouble out of his shoes. Undertaker wins with the tombstone after sending Mankind to the thumbtacks. Finally, first blood for the WWF title as Kane takes on the Rattlesnake. Solid main event, and we see the Hell in a Cell come back down while Taker and Mankind, who I don't know how he could walk, come down with Austin getting an errant chair shot from Undertaker, costing him the title. And Kane is WWF champion for now. Corey Ferreira. Taka and the Headbangers versus Kai and Tai. Solid six-man tag. Taka and Kai and Tai do a good job together in the ring. Headbangers seem really out of place. Shamrock Jarrett, King of the Ring semifinal. Not that good. Shamrock wins. Rock Severin. First pay-per-view match for Severin in the WWF. They do a job teasing the Severin-Shamrock final, playing up on their past in the UFC tournaments. This match is awful, though. Rock advances to the final. Too Much, Al Snow Head. Snow's back in the WWF after a year off. This is one of the dumbest fucking concepts they have done in WWF history. The match is fucking awful, and the finish insults the intelligence of anyone who watches it, putting a bottle of shampoo on a head so you can pin the head's shoulders. Fuck you, Russo, for this one. X-Pac versus Owen Hart, Nation versus DX here, and it's a lot better than the last two matches. This is not in the league of the match these two had back in 94, but still, it's the best thing on this show at this point. X-Pac wins. NAO versus NME. This is poor. I guess they play up that Bart and Billy were tag partners, but it's not that kind of big of a deal. Outlaws win, like that shocks anyone. Shamrock Rock, another match between these two, makes up for the poor showings earlier in 98. Shamrock wins and is crowned King of the Ring, but the highlight of the match is when Triple H on commentary says he's a lot of things, bye, but lingual is not one of them, and then realizes what he said and takes it back. Taker Mankind, welcome to one of the most overrated matches in history. I get what it means and all, but fuck, am I sick of it being considered a classic match because it's really not. Wow. Yeah, Foley gets thrown off the cell, and after that, the match becomes boring. Taker wins. Wow.
Interesting. It's a little rough, I think.
Yeah. Kane versus Austin. I consider this match a lot better than the last match. It's just a great brawl with the question throughout the match, can Austin make Kane bleed? The cell is lowered as Mankind and Taker make their way out to interfere. Austin gets hit by a chair and is busted open. And when the ref comes to Kane comes to, Kane is named the new WWF champion as Austin goes crazy and starts hitting stunners on people. Overall, a good show saved by the three main events and X-Pac Owen, but this will forever be remembered as the show.
Hang on. You know, he says it's saved by the three. I mean, four of nine matches, I don't, that's really saving the show. I mean, that's the majority of the show, time-wise.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a little much. I mean, usually you say one or two matches maybe saves the show, but I think four where, you know, two of them are, or three of them comprise over, you know, half the show, time-wise.
Yeah.
Come on, man.
But this will forever be remembered as the show where it fully went off a cage. And wow, he was rough on the cell. And here's Meltzer's ratings. 2.25 for the opener. Shamrock Jarrett, 1. Rock Severin, -0.5 star.
You know me with minus stars. I think it's asinine, but go ahead.
Yeah. Here's another one. Too much versus Al Snow and Head, -2. X-Pac Owen, 2.25. NAO NME, 1.5. Rock Shamrock, 3.25. Taker Mick, 4.5. And Kane Steve, 3.25. So even Meltzer likes the
I don't think you can take, I mean, I understand it's like the Iron Man and everything else where people are just tired of hearing about it. I don't think that should affect the grade of the match, though. I mean,
yeah, I agree.
It's still, you know, momentous and monumental. So, yeah. All right, Michael McDonald. In the long run, the event became memorable for one thing. I'll touch on that at the end. The tournament itself wasn't awful, but really weird. I don't recall thinking Shamrock Rock was a definite final match, but there it was to see. Nice to see several mid-card and upper mid-card feuds. Tom Selleck tried hard, but he proved right away he just didn't fit in. You just don't get over in a wet gray t-shirt. If I recall correctly, the reason Waltman doesn't wrestle until this month is because he had to be cleared of a serious neck injury from WCW. Doesn't stop him and Owen from having a good contest, and I'm impressed that unlike a certain hairy Japanese guy, Pac was able to return with a new, fresher gimmick in-ring style and not have negative residuals of his last run. The rest of the undercard is there, not overly offensive by any stretch. Considering they have booked themselves into the first of many fucking horrible corners with the first blood, they managed to get an interesting, pseudo-confusing finish to work around. Austin was legit channeling Paul Roma, WrestleMania 7, with his infected elbow, and Glenn Jacobs finally can put the one-day WWF champ paycheck into getting some decent teeth. Now the sell. After seeing Corey's comments, I think are extremely harsh. In the written review, those comments even seem a tad jaded. This is the match of the moment that didn't make me a fan, but made me respect the hell out of wrestling. You can call out the match for being poor, work rate rise, but really, Undertaker has a broken foot going into the match, so he's limited, and then fully wrestles most of it out in the cold and doesn't remember it most of it. Now, there'll be a multitude of better, more polished in-ring matches before and after, but I don't consider those attributes applicable. You instead have the proof that Mick Foley loved the business and the fans so much, he pushed himself to the brink of destruction because, rightly or stupidly, he didn't want people to feel shortchanged. Instead of moments leading into a match, you have a match that became a moment. I like that quote. Replayed as many times, it still doesn't diminish the injury list. And I've definitely come around, Michael. I agree with your points there.
Craig Dickinson.
The hell did you go?
No, I lifted my mic up to take a drink. Craig Dickinson. Mick Foley's two insane bumps and the image of a bloody Austin staring at The Undertaker ensure this goes down as one of the most memorable King of the Ring pay-per-views. The undercard here isn't too bad. Taka and the Bangers get a win to pop the crowd early, whilst Owen and X-Pac bring the work rate in their encounter, which is probably the best in-ring mid-card matchup to this point in 1998. On the other hand, Too Much vs. Al Snow was a god-awful mess and had no business getting 10 minutes of pay-per-view time. The tournament semifinals are nothing special. Both Rock and the crowd get pissed as Dan, Freddie Mercury, Severn, wait, Freddie Mercury and Tom Selleck, go for waistlock after waistlock. The final sees Rocky and Shamrock square off yet again, but thankfully Triple H on commentary gives the match a new dimension. Both main events are great in my view. Sure, the cell match isn't a patch on Shawn Taker in terms of work rate, but mixed bumps help build up Taker as a crazy, black-hearted bastard ahead of SummerSlam. Austin and Kane have a good brawl, and the cell being lowered really adds to the atmosphere of the match. I love the finish with Mankind and Taker running, or should that be hobbling, in with Taker costing Austin the belt. All in all, the show is pretty damn good, and with the exception of Too Much for Sal Snow, it always seems to fly by whenever I stick the DVD in. Is it actually on DVD?
No, I probably just burned it on DVD.
Or maybe he had, yeah, I guess so, because I was going to say, I don't think they ever made a DVD.
No. Dave Hall, one of the most memorable shows ever, even though the in-ring action is still developing. Taka, in another tag match, against Kai and Tai, rather defending his title against one of them. It's a shame we never saw some title matches between Taka and his buddies. King of the Ring semi sees Shamrock dispatch Jarrett easily while Rock defeats Severin. I really thought the Beast would win, as I thought WWF was building to Shamrock Severin at some point. However, Severin's style never really connected with the audience, and Rock deserved the win. Too Much Al Snow was just a comedy match. I did like the head and shoulders moment. X-Pac makes his return, going over Owen, while the Outlaws defeat the Express. Final three matches stand out. Shamrock puts an end to their feud, allows the men to go into bigger and better things. The main event of Austin versus Kane was a little underwhelming. Kane, having both arms covered, gave away the match finish, something even Jim Ross would note during the bout. Undertaker causes another great Austin blood moment and sets up the next few months of main events. Finally, the show-stealing moments, Hell in a Cell. Mankind goes off the top through the roof onto Tax and into legend with his performance, aided by a clearly injured Undertaker. One of the few matches in history where no one remembers who, or cares who won the match. An enjoyable show and certainly one of the better King of the Ring events.
Okay. Dennis Nunez. A real mixed bag of a show as the first half is filled with average to below average stuff, but the second half is memorable and in one case groundbreaking. Shamrock winning King of the Ring against Rocky was a good effort by both guys, but the highlight is Triple H's commentary. It's a shame that Hunter wasn't utilized on the mic more often because I think he has a knack for it. Maybe when he really retires, he could do something like that. Mick Foley. The man is just simply fearless or completely insane. That cell match left both me and my dad just shell-shocked at the time. I remember being dumbfounded when Mick goes back up to the top of the cell after getting thrown off. Everything else after that was just crazy to watch. We're so used to seeing it now that people tend to forget how shocking it really was to watch at the time. In hindsight, it probably should have gone on last. Kudos to Taker, also for jumping into the ring with a broken foot. Jim Ross's commentary is also the best it's ever been so far, in my opinion. Kind of surprised they didn't make Austin retain the title and have Kane set on fire somehow. You really believed at that time during the Attitude Era that anything was possible, and seeing that wouldn't have surprised me. Stone Cold and Kane put on a pretty good brawl given Steve's infected elbow. Why didn't they make a point for Austin to open up the back of Kane's head? Better than nothing. Kane winning is a surprise, but the next night, blah, blah, blah. Overall, good show with historical moments, but nothing else. But we are now heading into the greatest summer in WWF history, with Stone Cold still leading the charge as the main event scene starting with next month's show gets interesting.
Our buddy Chad Campbell. King of the Ring 98 is a decent show, mainly remembered for the incredible Hell in a Cell match with Undertaker and Mankind. No matter how many times I see Foley's bump, it makes me gasp still. One of my favorites all-time spectacle matches, and certainly one of the most memorable matches in WWF history. The rest of the show is just there, and I don't understand the rationale of having Austin lose the strap this early in this fashion that didn't make Kane look that strong either.
And we have a guest that commented on our board, a gentleman by the name of Michael Lindsay. He comments twice. I'll just read both. This was the last event that I truly enjoyed as a fan. The cell match was fantastic. My taste for wrestling was soured when Austin needlessly lost the belt. Just blah, 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 blah. Significance of championship belts really was important to me, and this show marked the beginning of the end of me being able to remember the championship lineage of the WWE belt. Ring of Honor does it right with long title reigns. This is why Punk's reign seems so good now. Referring to something now. I found myself really upset with Austin losing just to win it back. Then I think he's wrote it twice. The title was becoming a joke. Hopefully, with longer title reigns coming back, the title could be restored to its past glory. This was the last event that I remember really liking due to the cell match. And from that moment, my enjoyment of the product was spiraling down due to the overbooking of the Attitude Era. It was around this time that I stopped being able to name all the WWE champs due to frequent title changes.
All right, there's your feedback, and there is our review of King of the Ring 98. I think Scott and I both need a breather. So we'll take a little break. We're going to come back. We have a little business to take care of, and we're going to do just really, really brief NFL predictions for week two of the playoffs here. So, Scott, take us to break.
Because!
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
How many pro wrestling news websites do you visit to get your daily news? 3, 4, maybe 5? Do yourself a favor and make that number 1. WrestleChat.net, the only professional wrestling news site that brings you all wrestling news all day long, and is home of the critically acclaimed Still Real to Us podcast, starring former CZW ROH and ECW announcer Eric Gargiulo and the champ Jeff Peck. That's WrestleChat.net. WrestleChat, it's where it's at.
So there's WrestleChat.net, indeed, where it's at. Great message board, plenty of news topics to browse, WWE, TNA, Ring of Honor, the Still Real to Us podcast, much, much more. It's the official place for the PTB headlines, and if you click the PTB gnome on the right of the screen, you will head directly to our Podbean page and our full catalog of shows. So check it out, WrestleChat.net, indeed, where it's at. Also, head to our message board, bigelow34.proboards.com. It's really where PTB began. Our written reviews, the territory wars, and so much more. So head to our message board, bigelow34.proboards.com. If you want a one-touch spot for our show, head to Stitcher.com and the Stitcher app for all phones and tablets, iPhones, Droids, whatever you got. Go to Stitcher.com for more details. We also can't forget our good friend Graham Cawthon and the history of WWE.com. It's the best research site you'll ever find. Past ring results, pay-per-view reviews, and so much more. Graham's a good friend of the show. Always help you with what you need. So that's the history of WWE.com. We can't forget our good friend Jay Womet continues to battle with lymphedema. The guy's a warrior, folks. For a guy who's had so many medical problems, he's always in great spirits when he's on the show. He's one of our dearest friends. There's a great way you can help him out. Medical bills are not cheap, particularly with a very a unique condition like his. So head to our board, bigelow34.proboards.com, for more information. We'd also like to welcome our newest sponsor to the program, and that is the Wrestling Forum at twfnews.com. Listen, they're a wrestling forum, they're a blog site, but really they're much more than that. The guys at TWF are looking to create a wrestling media nation by affiliating with as many top-quality blogs, podcasts, and vodcasts as they possibly can. And that includes yours. They're the official forum of WrestleChat.net, and we here at The Place to Be have already joined up to have our podcast featured on there as well. So go check them out and find out what they're doing, what they're about, at TWFnews.com.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly, longtime announcer with the WWE, now the voice of Ring of Honor Wrestling. No better place to be than right here on the Place to Be podcast. Make sure you tune in every week.
And we are back. Scott and I here. Hope you enjoyed that review of King of the Ring 1998. We got some business we want to take care of quickly, and then we'll do our NFL predictions, and then we will hit the bricks. Wanted to plug our buddies over at Where the Big Boys Play podcast, Parv and Chad. They do an awesome job. Basically, like our Vintage Vaults, but they're doing all the NWA major shows, pay-per-views, clashes, and all that. They are up to Clash 4 right now posted. And Scott, you and I joining the boys for Starrcade 88. How about that?
Yes, we did. Yes, we did.
Our first guest spot.
Yes, and you know, these guys actually, they do a wonderful job. They're usually pretty succinct, and of course us, we made them unsuccinct as the show is ridiculously long, but very informative. It was a lot of fun. Love to have them on again, and they're going to join us as well at some time in the future.
Yeah,
too,
definitely.
So, looking forward to it.
Good guys, and yeah, you're right. It was something different for us. So definitely check them out. It's HTTP jerryvonkramer.ipage.com. /podcast/ Where the Big Boys Play. You can find that over at our message board, bigelow34.proboards.com. It has picked up a little bit. We're still looking for everyone to get a little more involved. We picked up a couple of new reviewers. There are some great reviews over there, by the way. Our buddy Riddler, Coldstone, they do some really good work. Check that out. My blog is up and running. Scott's going to start his. You have our written reviews there. All kinds of discussion. The pay-per-view prediction contest will be kicking off with the Royal Rumble, so you can get in fresh, start the new year there. And the NFL prediction contest is winding down. J.O.'s actually put some DVDs on the line there, so that's cool. Maybe he'll do the same for the pay-per-views. Mm. Find us also on Facebook, Place to Be Podcast. You can just search that. And then we have a separate private live chats page that you can request to join, and we can add you. That's where we have the majority of our conversation. Something really cool has been happening lately. A lot of guys are doing kind of live blogging of shows that they're watching. A lot of Royal Rumble's been thrown around. Our buddy Josh Richard did They Live, which was really entertaining. Really cool idea, and I like it. It's been generating a lot of comments and a lot of conversation. So, guys, keep that up. It's a lot of fun to watch. And anyone who isn't there and you're on Facebook, you want to get in on it. If, you know, you're home at night watching wrestling, or you just want someone to chat with, there's always someone in there looking to talk wrestling or looking to talk sports or whatever. We have a lot of fun there. So check that out as well. And visit us on Twitter, Place2BPodcast. You can follow there as well. Now, Scott, Thursday night's a big night for us.
So excited.
You've been waiting forever for this.
I have, and it has officially been booked. We have confirmed it again. This Thursday night, which will be episode 189 of the Place to Be podcast, we'll be joined by two people. One of them, Jason Greenhouse's favorite correspondent,
yes.
And that is, of course, our good friend, the great Dr. G, will be returning. Why? Because this coming Thursday is the much-anticipated interview with, in my opinion, next to Bobby the Brain Heenan, the greatest manager in the history of pro wrestling. And that is the great James J. Dillon.
Yes. Lots to talk about with JJ. Again, he had a long, lengthy career, both in the ring, out of the ring. Did a lot of stuff with the Horsemen, obviously. That was where he kind of rose to fame in the late, mid to late 80s in the NWA. Jumped ship in 88. Became a backstage kind of right-hand man with Vince McMahon through the early 90s, was involved in booking. Lots to talk about there, obviously. He was there through 96. Then he was with WCW during the boom period. NWO, he was on-screen character. So a lot of cool stuff to talk to JJ about. He's got a good book out as well. So I'm really looking forward to diving into JJ's career. and I hope to have that for you on either Thursday night or Friday, the latest, depending on how late we go Thursday. So yeah, that will be up. Stay tuned for that later this week. If you haven't checked out what we have up, Suburban Commando, we reviewed this past weekend with Andrew Flanagan. We were live in studio for that, both of you. That was fun. Also, our 2012 year interview with Graham Cawthon is also posted, so check that out. That was really good, too. Something different that we hadn't done before. So there you go. Next week, Scott, what's on tap after JJ? We have,
let's see,
Fully Loaded, I believe, right? Early in the week.
Let me open up the
schedule. Oh, next week, I'm waiting to hear from him, but it might be Kevin again, hopefully.
Yes. I hit the wrong thing.
Okay,
but yeah.
Fully Loaded Monday, and then hopefully Kevin will join us Wednesday. I'm still trying to work that out with him. We'll talk first half of 98. And then we have a couple more shows after that, and we're going to have a week off when I go on vacation. So a lot of stuff here as we crest into episode 200.
Yes, we got a lot of great vaults coming up. Mm-hmm. We have another possible, we're not going to tip our hat because we hate doing that. We possibly have even another great interview possibly coming up down the line. We've talked to a GC about that, but we have another good interview coming up down the line as well. So,
all right, Scott, let's quickly.
Got a lot of stuff.
Yep. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say a lot of stuff, but I really stress going on to our message board, particularly with the reviews.
Mm-hmm.
This, you know, and I'll be very brief, but when you're a fan, you watch anything. Even though you and I, and when we listen to the Chad and Parv show, we kind of threw some dirt in AWA's grave, but you and I pretty much will watch anything. You know, and we know that you as fans do too. Just throw anything in, even if it's I don't care. Throw in one of the extra discs of a DVD. I don't care what. Throw in whatever you want, and just write about it. Just write. Write like you're thinking or you're talking. That's what we love to do. And then it starts the conversation, and it's a lot of fun.
Yeah,
so,
whether it's on the board or even on the live chats page, which has really become the spot for this stuff lately. I want to thank our bud, you know, Kevin Bowers, and a few others have really gone out there and got those going. And I know I'm going to yell that for forgetting people that have been doing it, but there's a few out there that Dave Hall's been doing a lot of it with the robots.
Mr. Faff has been doing
something. Yeah, there's a lot out there that have been doing this, and I think it's a lot of fun. And it's good to see the nation growing, especially as we head into Mania as well, where a lot of us will be attending. So we're looking forward to that. All right, Scott, let's quickly do our NFL predictions. We'll wrap up. Pretty sloppy first weekend. The last game was the best. Seattle defeated Washington. We had Baltimore defeating Indy. We saw Green Bay eliminate Minnesota and Houston end the run of Cincy. Your boy sitting over here in Coventry, Rhode Island, was 4-0, my friend.
Yes. I was actually, well, I picked all 4-2, but I was late with the first, so that one didn't count on our picks. But
you didn't take Indy? I thought you took Indy for some reason.
No, I didn't take Indy. Okay. I took the Ravens.
All right, let's start out. Go ahead. Start us up.
Okay. Saturday, we'll begin at Invesco Field at Mile High, or whatever the hell it's called now, Sports Authority Field at Mile High. The Broncos will host the Baltimore Ravens. I want to pick Baltimore. I really do. And I think Ray Lewis is going to have a boss night. I just, right now, it seems like Peyton's on a mission.
Yeah.
An absolute mission. So I think it's going to be close for a while. And then I think you're going to see Manning to Decker at least twice in the second half. I like the Broncos.
I like Denver at home here, too. I think Baltimore kind of had their big emotional game. They really stomped on Indy, and Ray Lewis had his moment and everything. But I think Denver's just a better team.
Okay. And then the nightcap will go out to Candlestick Park in San Francisco, where the 49ers host the Green Bay Packers. Probably the most competitive game.
Yeah, this one I've been going back and forth on all day. Yeah, and I'm gonna do my pick here, but I'm not sticking to it. I'm giving the warning that it may change.
Okay, I'm taking the Packers. They're just a more seasoned team. And they're another team on a mission after the debacle of what happened to them last year when they were cruising to a possible repeat and then got mollywhomped by the Giants. I think Aaron Rodgers wants to kind of get his slate clean. So I'm going to take the Packers. And, you know, I know Colin Kaepernick's played well. You know, he's 5-2, but it's a playoff game. And you're facing a team that's won the Super Bowl the last couple of years. I think he makes a couple of big mistakes and the Packers win.
I want to take Green Bay because I feel like in these cases, you always go with the better quarterback when the teams are this even. But as we'll see later, I'm going with the other road team in the NFC, and I don't think both will. I know this is stupid to go that way, but I don't know if both are going to win. I think San Fran holds serve and wins a tight, tight game at home. I think the break has really helped them with the bye, and I think it'll be a little bit tough for Green Bay to go in there and win. I don't know. I'm torn, like I said. This may change 10 times before Saturday night for me.
Okay. Then on Sunday, we'll begin at the Georgia Dome in Atlanta, where the Falcons will host the Cinderella Seahawks. I know Clemens is hurt, and he's out, the lineman for the Seahawks.
Yeah, big blow for
ACL.
Them.
Yeah. I know everybody wants to pick the Seahawks, but this is a game the Falcons can't afford to lose.
No, for the legacy, they need to win.
They need to win for Mike Smith, for Matt Ryan, for anybody that's a Falcon fan. You cannot, I repeat, cannot lose this game. I don't think they do.
Well, Scott, I disagree. I think Seattle wins. I think that is the better team. I think Atlanta isn't tough enough. I think Seattle's just a tough, tough team. They can come from behind. They have the defense. They have the cornerbacks, the secondary to really hang with those receivers. Matt Ryan struggles under pressure. We've seen that. And, you know, the Seahawks have been on fire. They really have been. They've been dominant. And they were down early. They fought back against Washington. I know you can tell me about Griffin being hurt and all that stuff, but still, down 14-0 on the road like that. They're 1/3 and long away from, you know, blowing that game, and they didn't. I like Seattle here. I think Seattle-San Fran is our NFC Championship game at this moment.
Okay. I just can't see the Falcons affording to lose. I can't see it happening. I think they know they can't. And they'll get. It's for Mike Smith's job, in essence. I just can't see them. And I'm not saying they're not going to blow out the Seahawks. I just don't see them winning. And then finally, Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, where the Patriots, who, quote, are on another bye, heard about that today, as they host the Houston Texans, who they mollywhomped a few weeks ago on Monday night. I want to pick the Texans. I want to think that Gary Kubiak has enough to really motivate this team to go in there and show some gonads after getting embarrassed there on Monday night, but I can't. I can't.
No, I think this is going to be closer than all these drones up here in New England want to believe. I mean, they've been talking so arrogantly; it's really disgusting. I mean,
I agree. I don't think it's going to be a. They're not going to win. They're not going to blow them out again.
No, the blueprint is here for the Texans. If they look back at the 2010 Jets, the same thing happened to them. They got killed on Monday night. They came back a few weeks later, and you know, they hit the shit out of Brady. They controlled the ball. The key to beating New England is to eat the clock. Eat the clock. The Giants have done it in the Super Bowl to them. Minimize the number of snaps that New England gets. That is how you beat them. And that's what Houston needs to do. They cannot fall behind. If they fall behind, they are done. I like New England here. I don't bet against them in these earlier rounds at home like this usually. So I'll take New England. Not that I'm betting, but I'll take New England. And
metaphorically.
Yes, metaphorically. I don't see Houston winning in New England. If they were at home, I probably would have taken them. But I think it'll be closer than most people around here think it is.
And it's also, there's a big legacy thing here for Tom Brady, who takes his legacy seriously. Saw it on the ticker on ESPN a little while ago. He is 16-6 in his career in the playoffs. His 16 playoff wins tie him with Joe Montana for the most playoff wins in a career. And you know how much he loves Montana. He's a Cali kid. He wants to be Montana. So it would be his 17th playoff win, which would be the all-time NFL record. He cares about stuff like that. So, particularly passing his idol.
I can't believe we're lined up for possibly a Brady Manning showdown once again. Should be awesome.
I know. Yeah.
So all right.
I agree with you. I like the Patriots, but I don't think the Texans are going to roll over like a, you know.
I hope
like
not. I really hope not.
In the Monday night game. I don't think they do.
All right. There are your NFL predictions. Hope you guys enjoy the games. I'm going to give a major spoiler right here, but I'm going to give a break for 1 second because if anyone doesn't want to hear this, because this is going to air before SmackDown airs, the SmackDown tapings were tonight, and there is a major spoiler, so we will take a moment if anyone wants to skip ahead.
Okay. I will count 10 seconds, and then after the 10 seconds,
actually I guess ahead. I'm the better than your 10 seconds.
Okay.
Okay. Major spoiler for SmackDown. We have a new World Heavyweight Champion.
What?
The Big Show has fallen. And it's probably someone maybe you didn't think it would be. Any predictions, Scott?
Well, because you said that, I was going to say Sheamus won it back. But now that you said that, probably not. Babyface. Wow. Huge, huh?
Yeah. I mean, there goes my big Ryback Show match. I've been pimping for Mania all this time.
Daniel Bryan.
No.
Oh. Is it a crossover or is it a usual SmackDown guy?
SmackDown guy.
Okay. Somebody who doesn't have a belt. I'd love to say Damian Sandow, but I know that's not going to happen.
No.
Please don't tell me The Rock.
No.
That would have been stupid. He is going to be on Friday night, of course.
Yes.
First time in 10 years on his show. Oh, geez. Cody Rhodes?
No.
Okay.
All right, so you're out of guesses.
Yep.
The one, the only, Mr. Alberto Del Rio.
Wow, really?
Has defeated the Big Show. So I don't know what's going on.
I was thinking of baby faces. Wow. Unless he turned
face.
Well,
he is baby face.
Yeah, well, they don't know what the fuck's going on with him. They think they do, but then they do other things. And
I'm surprised. I mean, show must be hurt or something. Why would they just put the belt on Del Rio? I mean, unless they're just really trying to start to shock people to get them to watch. I mean, maybe they're back to that. I don't know. Major change, though. So there you go. There's a SmackDown spoiler. We'll talk about that on the Facebook pages as we go throughout the week here on the Place to Be podcast network.
And again, one more quick thing. Yes. If you haven't watched Raw this week.
I feel bad for you, son.
Yeah, really. there's 99 reasons to watch it. No.
Yeah.
The show overall was okay. But if you don't want to watch, skip ahead to like 10:43 and just watch. I'm leaving it at that.
Yes. Amazing. Amazing stuff from CM Punk and The Rock.
And The Rock. Awesome. Awesome. Epic.
Epic.
You want to talk about booking a main event? A real bona fide top flight main event. That's how you do it.
Yeah. Exactly. All right. There it is. There is your review of King of the Ring 98 and all the other accoutrement that goes with it. That is Scott Griscolo. I am his good friend, Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast. We'll be back Thursday night. Dr. G will be in the house, and so will James, Jay, Dylan. Until then, PTB Nation, take care. Have a good night. We'll talk to you later.
Joe, the Broncos are playing.
When the song comes up in paradise.
Are we going to start doing those shows now, too?
I can smell the coca lotion in the air. Cool breeze blowing everywhere.
Coca lotion.
Better start running. There's a hurricane a-coming.
Bob the cock. And if we arrive there so safely, baby, you can lay me down. Lay me down. Lay me down. Lay me down. Well, it's the story of the two. Always on the move, they got nothing left to lose except their guns and their wounds. Now they're crossing border sheriffs, posse on a tail. They'd rather die together than be stuck up in a cell. They drank up all the whiskey and they partied every night. Like it could be the last, the bounty said to shoot on sight. So they chased the endless summer, knew it came with the price. They wouldn't stop running till they found a paradise. But the sheriff finally found him with his eyes seeing red. So the lovers had to shoot him down and fill him full of lead. They were finally free to find a place to lay their head. And when they finally did, he looked at her and he said, I said, I think that we can stay here. Cause I feel our time has come. And we can walk down to the ocean and sit with the rising sun. So unpack your bags this instant. No more running from town to town. And now that we've arrived so safely, baby, you can lay me down. Lay me down. Lay me down. Lay me down. Well, you're my green-eyed girl, and I've been running around with you. It's the afternoon, and we got nothing left to do. So wipe the dirt off. Or take your shirt off. And we should go hit the cantina. We got work off. I said it's hot outside. Let me go swimming in your eyes. We've been running for a while. Want you late, I'll make me smile. I could never ask for nothing better than this. It's just tequila and the beach. It's fine, salty when we kiss. I said I think that we can stay here. Cause I feel our time has come. And we can walk down to the ocean and sit with the rising sun. So unpack your bags this instant. No more running from town to town.